Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer. Streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
I poured it in my mouth and it just wasn't going down.
My first beer was an IPA, the best IPA I've ever drank, mostly because I brewed it.
If you have a scale that is good for measuring cocaine, you're probably good for measuring hops.
You're scaring me.
I think the information is awesome and the audio sucks.
Make some sugary water, throw some yeast in there,
and you're going to drink good beer.
Yeah, it's going to be good beer.
It's fine.
God damn it, man.
Oh, my God.
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Session. I'm your host, Justin Crosley. With me today, so far, we have Teresa Sudi.
Hello.
Welcome, Teresa, back to the studio. Beardy's here with us.
Yes.
I don't know about JP yet, although he says he'll be here at some point, I imagine.
Well, we know he left his house.
We know that he left his house.
Do we know he's coming here?
We don't.
Oh.
Do we know if he's riding a scooter or driving a car?
Yeah, he's walking.
We know nothing. Could be.
Hopefully he's walking.
Could be driving a stroller, for all I know. Maria and I think he'll be here soon. It's good to be back in the studio. Of course, last week we did a remote broadcast from Russian River Brewing Company. If you haven't checked out that show, you should. I also put up a little video on our YouTube page, so you can go look at it there. It was mostly just a really quick video of Vinny describing the cool ship room.
Yeah.
And the cool ship itself, and the wort that he put in it, that he is going to make a Brewing Network beer, which is exciting.
Did we ruin it yet?
I don't know. I haven't gotten any updates.
Okay.
He did say it was going to take at least 7 days for it to begin.
Okay.
It's spontaneous fermentation. But that was a lot of fun. It's good to be there.
Yeah.
I don't generally like remotes. I like being in the studio.
Right.
Except for this fishbowl effect we have where, like, people I don't know, like, wave at me, and then I feel like a dick because I'm like, I don't know who you are.
That's your Grindr and Tinder dates waving at you.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
This
your location's on.
Yeah, because I don't use or know how to use those apps, I thought you meant like this window is like my Grindr and Tinder.
Okay.
That I just wait here until somebody waves at me and then I like swipe them away interested.
I manage your accounts.
I see.
So I say you're here.
Okay.
And that way I get you some new friends.
Got
There's
it.
A dating app called Grindr?
Yeah,
that's terrible.
It's. I think that's the gay one.
It is.
Yeah, it's the gay.
I don't want. I don't want to
limit my prospects.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to turn down anybody that Justin might be into.
Yeah, there just could be love in all the All the places.
Yeah, in all the places. You know, I've never been.
God bless.
I've never been picky before. Why start now? You know?
Yeah. It could be a zoo animal effect, too. You're like waving your paws around. They're like, yeah. Hey, here's a peanut.
Yeah.
And with how good I am at small talk, you don't want to limit any of your potential pool.
That's true. The people that you're going to bring my way.
And his vision, by the way, he's the one swiping left or right for you.
Right. Hey, all sounds like a winning recipe to me.
Yeah. I've got a lot of pixels on this phone zoomed in very close.
I do generally like to be in the studio, though. It just feels a little easier and a little more comfortable. But I have to say, I had so much fun on last week's show at Russian River. And I don't think I've had that much fun on a show in a very, very long time. And part of that was, of course, the excitement of being at Russian River. But then also Vinny and Natalie are just so nice and kind. And I've always said this about Vinny. I think I've said it on the air before. You know, for those of you who feel starstruck around Vin, I can fix this for you in a moment. He just wants to talk about beer. Like, he's such a beer guy, like the rest of us, such a beer geek.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he minds you saying, oh my God, I love you, I love your beer. But I'm just saying, after you get over your gushing, and you should do it quickly.
Right.
Just start asking him beer questions. Like that, people think that, oh, he must be tired of this, and it's the opposite. That's
exactly
instantly how you get the Vinny that the rest of us know and love. And that's what made the show so fun. Like, you can just, I'm telling you, even before we went on the air, like, he was excited all day to, you know, I had to show up way early, and he was so excited all day to get to sit down and talk about beer for 3 hours.
Yeah. His eyes lit up when I asked him about the CIP process on his wet roller mill.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
Like no other.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, he was just, he spent so many hours and just on the whole time and just like, yeah, never met a more pleasant person who loves beer more and loves to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. So it just made for a very pleasant experience, I think, for all of us. The cool ship room, which he had filled with wort that day, was a little humid.
Yes.
It's a little.
And by a little, you mean a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, yeah, we basically felt like we were doing the show from under a sauna.
Right. It felt like the end of the show at the beginning of the show.
Yeah. So it posed its own challenges, but it also just was a good time. And
yeah, he even closed down the place with us.
He did after the show, which is nice. And then we went to the RV and kept going like we always do.
Closed down the parking lot.
Teresa got her first experience at hanging out with us until too early in the morning. So sorry about that.
She excused herself. Just this one time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, eventually when I was talking, my eyes were closed, and I started dreaming and talking at the same time. I said,
that's the time.
I'm going to go pass out in my van now.
Yeah, that's smart of you. Beardy doesn't do that. He pushes right through that.
Yeah, it comes in waves.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the sun's up and you're ready to go to work again.
Yeah. But yeah, it was just a great time. You can listen to the podcast, of course, over on the Brewing Network, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. And then go to our YouTube page and check it out. And if we've done everything right today, which is uncommon, I think we're also streaming this show live to YouTube right now.
It's working. I just confirmed it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we're trying to get back to that little action because I know people like it over there. I was doing it on Facebook for a while and, you know, I don't know.
Is that the one where people can chat? Yeah. Live at you and heart but, your
but
words.
You, and you can do that on YouTube also. Facebook's so restrictive. They just have a lot of rules, and I can't stream to multiple destinations. So, in other words, I can't do YouTube and Facebook. Facebook has a rule.
It's not like we would have rules about what we could say.
No, it's not that. Although, who knows? Like, that stuff comes up all the time, too.
Yeah.
So, I'm switching it over to YouTube. We're gonna try it out over there. So, you can go to our YouTube page. You can follow us there. You can subscribe to our channel. It'll let you know. And I'm going to try to do all of our live shows over there. We experimented with YouTube a while back, too. And I was kind of moving between Facebook and YouTube because I want to try them both. And I've decided I think I like YouTube better. So that's where we are. Hi, JP. Perfect. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you very much. You know, that's another chat room that someone will have to monitor.
I mean, I don't think anybody monitors any of them anyway.
I think you can turn YouTube chat off.
I can.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Right. I know. Nobody knows which chat room to use. You know, I understand that.
Yeah,
so.
Facebook sucks because if you don't like the page often enough or whatever, then you never see the posts. So you're never going to see if we go live anyway if you're not super active on the channel to begin with. And it's just, it's a mess, man.
Well, and that's true. I will say we got more live viewers when we are on Facebook by quite a lot.
Nice.
But then the video sometimes would save and sometimes wouldn't. Whereas YouTube, they're just always there. Yeah. So over time, I feel like if people wanted to go back and like see if anyone's wearing a racist shirt, for example, it's they true. Can find that on YouTube.
No one would ever do that here.
I don't think so. Yeah. But I just that was just, it just popped into my head.
I prefer to say if someone is projecting racism onto an innocent shirt.
Then you can
because
go.
Because they're racist at their core.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Then you can go make that evaluation yourself because the video will remain on YouTube.
Look, really, it's scientific. That's the only scientific way to know for sure.
Yeah.
And we're all about sciencey stuff here.
Yeah, that's right. So you can go to youtube.com/brewingnetwork. And I would appreciate it if you subscribe to us. And then you get to know when we put up videos like the Russian River video, which I'm proud of that one. It was quick and dirty. Like, I just made it pretty simple. It's just Vinny explaining the thing. But it's a minute long. And you get to see not only this cool room, but like you kind of get a feel for how excited Vinny is, even in this like short 1 minute description of where he's at.
Nice.
So go check all that out and have some fun while you're at it. All right. On today's program, we've got Ghost Town Brewing Company out of Oakland, California. They're in studio with us. We're going to be talking to the fellas from there. You can go to ghosttownbrewing.com if you want to learn a little more about them right now. I've got one of their beers in my glass already, and I think they brought us quite a few.
Oh, wow. Perfect.
Yeah, they're all on tap here at the Hop Grenade if you want to come down and try it anytime this week. All right, let me get through just a couple of announcements we have for you this week.
No.
Brought to you today by Drake's Brewing Company. Go to drinkdrakes.com and check it out. And I've been telling you, this Saturday, May 25th, from 1 to 5 p.m. in Oakland's Jack London Square is Drake Brewing Company and Bike East Bay bringing together more than 30 local craft breweries to share their best session beers. It's all low ABV beers at the Session Beer Festival. Entry is free and open to all ages. There's going to be live music, food, games, prizes. They're going to have like beer pong and cornhole. They've got a Drake's Kickback Lounge you can go hang out at. There'll be a homebrewing demonstration by the Bay Area Mashers. That's pretty cool. And some of the participating breweries, 21st Amendment, our good friends over there, Alvarado Street, Cellar Maker, Firestone Walker, Humble Sea, Modern Times, Russian River, Temescal, and more. So entry is free, but if you want to taste the beer, you can get pre-sale tickets for $35 or $40 at the door, pending availability. So go to drinkdrakes.com, click on the Session Fest there, and get your tickets. That's this weekend, Saturday, May 25th.
We should make up one of those stupid like brewery games, like cornhole or washoes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We should just make up our own and like market. I don't know what like throw the bag on the pole, or I don't know. You know what I mean? Like something, just make up some dumb game. Well,
I was learning how to play cups yesterday, where you take a solo cup and you have to like bounce it down and stand back up.
Yeah, like that game.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm good at that game.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of sucked.
I like the game where you swing the ring onto the nail.
That one's tough. I like that game too.
Yeah.
That one's frustrating.
But like, how would we make up? Like,
sounds like a Twitter game to me.
That's our dumb beer game.
Twitter game is brought to you this week. Yeah.
I like the idea. The challenge is it. I mean,
by Hasbro.
I really like this idea. If we could invent something that catches on.
Well, like,
because like cornhole is a blast. I don't know why. It's such a stupid game.
Because you're throwing shit, I guess. And like washoes, that's like a brewery specific game that brewers made up, but it never really caught on. It was popular for about 4 seconds.
Yeah.
Remember that? Like 5 years ago.
Faction loves it. And like that's and a
that's
couple
it.
Other guys.
And then I think cornhole came on the scene and kind of overtook it. So you're right. If we can get it to catch on, who knows, man?
I like it.
Sky's the limit on amount of people that won't know about it.
I like the idea.
All right. Like kick the baby? Kick the baby. Yes.
Yeah.
don't know.
Why is that the first thing that comes to my head?
I think you should name it Booth Baby.
Booth the Baby. Yeah. Yeah, Brewer's Boots, obviously.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah, you don't want to dirty your normal shoes.
Yeah.
Throw the baby in the boot.
All right, we're off to a good start, yeah. I guess, I feel like. Yeah.
Moving to Alabama soon.
Flo-bama, yeah. Coming to the bar.
Let's go.
Yeah. All right, so your announcements today are BNA 14, our 14th anniversary party. Tickets are on sale. It's happening Saturday, June 29th out in Providence, Rhode Island. It's the closing bash to HomebrewCon. After all that's done, you can come hang out with us. All you can drink for $35, which is pretty cool. It's a pretty good deal. You know, we change the party up a little bit every year, depending on our location and state laws and all that. And this year, we've teamed up with More Beer and Melvin Brewing Company. We're also going to announce the winner of the Boyle Rumble National Homebrew Competition that we did. It's a club competition. So we got a lot going on there. It's going to be a lot of good beer. I'm really excited about the venue. We rented out an entire music hall. And it has an arcade room, like there's one room that's just an arcade. It's got a big ballroom. It's got like a smaller whiskey bar. You'll be able to purchase liquor additionally, but it's all you can drink craft beer.
You mean like a ball pit room?
No, that would be fun. That would be fun. No, like a ballroom, like a grand ballroom.
Oh, for dancing and boring things.
Yeah.
Not a ball pit.
That would be cool, though. I wish I could have found a place with that.
That would be cool. And then you could actually fill the hop grenade here with ball pit. Like, and then, but it's like a pool bar where you wade up to the bar.
In the
you have to, like, wade through.
Oh, my God.
You have to wade through.
How sticky and nasty would those be with all the beer?
Think of all the germs.
Sounds absolutely disgusting. Yeah.
I could hide my erection at that point.
Maybe. Yeah. Balls start popping out.
Yeah. Oh, God. Be more specific.
All right. Just go to thebrewingnetwork.com and you can click on the event right there on their homepage. It's a giant picture of the FET Music Hall, actually. So come hang out with us. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and we just get to hang out and drink some beer. We'll do some entertainment on the stage. And we're giving away the official Brewing Network More Beer Brew Sculpture. So you get raffle tickets with your purchase of entry, and you'll be able to get more too. So go to thebrewingnetwork.com right now and buy your tickets before they sell out, especially the VIP hour. We're doing a little VIP hour too. We hang out early, and you get more raffle tickets for that. And we're doing a little meet and greet with the Brewing Network, the Melvin guys, and More Beer as well. So go do that for me. All right. You can support the show by doing your Amazon shopping. Just click the Amazon link on our homepage. We'd appreciate it if you did that. So many of you do, and thank you. It really helps a lot. So thanks for doing that. And you can subscribe and join the BN Army. For as little as $2 a month, you're entered into the More Beer Monthly Donation Giveaway. And that's a chance to win $100 to More Beer. We give away a gift certificate to them every single month. So go hit the subscribe button, you know, hit the donate button on our homepage. And the more you donate, the more chances you have to win the $100 to More Beer. All right, what else? Don't forget to check out our other shows, Hop and Brew School, Heads and Tails, Shine Runner Craft Marketing, Dr. Homebrew. We got all kinds of stuff on the Brewing Network now. I'm surprised sometimes. I go look at our webpage and like, yeah, I just tend to like keep moving, right? Like I don't like stop and appreciate or look back too much. And but I was looking through the site the other day and like, holy shit, do we have a lot of shows now?
We have a lot of shows.
The Sour Hour, Dr. Homebrew, Heads and Tails, Hop and Brew School.
Do we still
Brew
do that?
Strong still killing it.
Do we still do that bike show?
You know, those guys, I just took all my equipment back from those guys. Mostly because now it's like it's remote season. Like we had the show at Russian River and we've got a HomebrewCon. And no, they kind of, like, I set them up with all my stuff, yeah. And then it's not their fault. Like, life just gets in the way.
It's a commitment, I think, a lot more than you think it's going to be.
The thing is, though, I know that now, and I've known that for years, right. So I express that every time, and it doesn't matter how much you talk to people.
No.
They just go. It happens with sponsors, too, by the way. You know, sponsors sign up, and they're like, you know, how often can we change our sponsor message? And I'm like, you can change it every week. You can just let me know. Oh, we're going to do that. We want to keep it fresh. I'm like, okay. And they'll be like, we want to come in and record it ourselves every time. All right.
Yeah.
You know, but I always tell them, I go, listen, I know you think that it'd probably be good if we just get a few basic ones, you know, like general messages. And then, right. You know, that way when you run out of time, we still have... And they're like, no, we'll be here. And it never happens. Anyhow, I do think they got their group back. Like, the host, Zach, had texted me like, hey, we got a new co-host who has more availability now, and we're about to get this going again. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, man, timing. I'm coming to pick up my equipment next week.
I just broke into your house and took all my shit.
Yeah. But I do think they found another studio to record in, so I do hope that one comes back.
Well, yeah, that'll be cool.
But yeah, we got a lot of content, not to mention our back catalog. But I'm just saying, you know, in all the years we've been doing this, I've always envisioned it. There's a reason we named it the Brewing Network, because it was never supposed to be about one show. And I just was kind of proud to see how many different shows we have now.
Yeah, really absolutely. Cool.
That's like a brewery having a lot of beers on the board. You know, you got diversity.
Yeah. And I really don't think that there's another entity in beer that like has anything like that, you know.
No.
That much media. Mm-hmm. Available. So
maybe you should try listening to one of the shows.
I don't know.
No, don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to do that. Don't do that.
I recently started listening to podcasts like at all. Like I hated podcasts. For all the years we've been doing this, I hated podcasts.
Yeah.
And I think I finally actually accepted that we're a podcast.
Yeah.
Mostly because I can't deny it anymore. Like, it pays the fucking bills.
Right.
And then there's some good ones out there now.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Really wasn't for so long.
Well, and I think it's almost like the pendulum is also kind of swinging back the other way, where everything is so overproduced and overwritten. Like, there's a pod that was really good. Is it? I forget the name of it now. I apologize. But it's, like, so overwritten and over-dramatized. It's true crime, which is super hot. And it's like, I can't listen to this anymore. It's almost gotten so good. It's bad now.
Right.
There is a middle ground, I think.
There is. Yeah. Like, I know everyone talks about this, so it feels silly even to say it, but Serial.
I was going to say, but Serial.
I mean, right? And now I found another one that I like too. But like,
well, don't say
but it. Here's what I want to say about Serial. It's not just the, I mean, obviously, like, the investigative journalism in Serial was just, it was top. These are world-class journalists. And they're being paid at, like, world-class journalists,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but what's her name? The
Sarah
host?
Koenig?
No, that's, she's criminal.
No.
Serial.
It's Sarah, yeah. That's it. And she's...
Phoebe Judge.
She is fabulous.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. Broadcaster, podcaster, storyteller. I don't care what you want to call her. She's amazing to listen to. And I'm a critic. And usually, if they're better than me, I hate them. She is way better than me, and I love her.
Yeah.
She's just wonderful. And so then I found this other one called In the Dark, another true crime.
That's a good one, too.
And so... Now I really like it, right? But for the first couple episodes, I'm listening to this other host, and I'm just like, oh, fuck. I can't. But she's not bad.
Right.
It's just that, like, by comparison, after listening to Sarah, I was just...
Sarah sets the bar really high.
Yeah, so really, it took me some getting used to, but then I realized, shit, the investigative journalism, once again, is great, and her delivery is just fine. She's talented as well.
Yeah.
But anyhow... I actually kind of like podcasts now. I'm not saying I'm like going nuts or anything, but
I found myself kind of doing that too. Criminal is a good one. It's like Serial, but that's Phoebe Judge. She's very more interview style rather than investigative journalism.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool. She has a cool pace. But there's one. It's like Dr. Death.
That one wasn't bad either,
which is pretty good. But that's what I was talking about. It's kind of like almost over dramatized, where the writing is almost a little too full of itself, and you're like, oh my god, dude! It took me out of the thing, but there's some good podcasts out there.
And then speaking of like over dramatized, there's also the ones that are like drama, like what's his nuts from Bohemian Rhapsody has one out now. The Oscar winner,
Queefus Queely. I don't know why he looks like
Rami something or other.
Rami Malek.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
put
Bug Eyes.
It's
Mr. Robot.
It's that guy.
It looks like he got his balls stuck in a zipper.
I like him a lot, and so he put out, it's a fictional, right? Mm-hmm. So, and it stars him, and I was like, oh, well, I like him a lot, so I'll check it out. But then, it's not bad, but then I'm like, wait, isn't this what we did, like, in the 30s? I was like, this is just, like, it's TV on the radio.
Yeah.
It's just, it wasn't the same.
It's on-demand radio.
It's on-demand, but it's... Do you see what I'm saying? Like, before television, you sat around on Sunday nights to listen to your favorite. And so I'm like, well, what do we do? We're going back to that now? Like, we're reverting.
So you don't read books anymore, do you?
Well, okay, that's an exception. But I do feel like there are ways that we take technology,
Warren.
it goes to a point, and then we revert. Here we go. Text messaging.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Let's be real. We've gone back to an easy way to carve shit in stone.
Yes.
We only communicate with fucking text again. Like if you really think about it, like the popularity of text is a reversion of where we used to be.
Oh, sure.
It just happens to be fast, right? So I feel like eventually even that will continue to revert into the past, and we will only speak to each other through images,
mm-hmm.
like fucking hieroglyphics. Emojis are, what are we, cavemen again? Like they. So I'm saying that there are certain technologies that we go, and yes. then we figure out how to bring them back to the caveman era.
So podcasts are the slippery slope.
So
back to drawing on caves.
Yes.
So the other day I was texting someone, and I was like, man, you know what would be great is if my phone would just read this text message back to me.
Absolutely.
Who's got time to read?
And then I could, you know, just verbally text back whatever. And I was like, Beverly,
that's talking.
A phone call.
Okay, so my car does that.
Yeah.
And I did it a couple times, did the same. I was like, why don't you just call this? But I'm talking to this. I'm talking to my car, and it took longer.
It's because you don't want to talk to the person.
You're right. I understand, and I don't want to talk to people either. Right. And I text message like a motherfucker. I'm not saying I don't like it.
Okay.
I'm just making an anthropological analysis of our communication.
Right.
We're reverting back to
technology is now allowing us to not have to deal with each other.
Yes.
Just
like cave walls used to do, yes.
When's the last time you resolved anything through text message that was faster than if you just picked up the phone for
right.
a few minutes?
Right. It's not. It's just,
yeah.
I don't know. Easier is not the right word. More comfortable. I don't know. I love it. Like, I mean, I think it's great.
We all have anxiety about what we're going to say. But when you write it down, it's like you can take all that away.
Yeah.
It wastes all kinds of time and there's total miscommunication.
Sure. Especially if you accidentally send a dick pic and you're like, it was the wrong text.
That's right.
Or if you accidentally send a terrible meme to your mother-in-law, which may or may not have happened in my life.
What did you send?
A picture of this gangbanger. First of all, my mother-in-law is like the most Christian woman in the whole world.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a picture of like this gangster-looking guy with like a teardrop tattoo, and he's like, people are generally nice except for Juan. Juan will fucking kill you.
And she was like, why is Juan going to kill me?
She was like, Bev, I don't think this was for me.
Oh, my God.
Nope, it was for you. That was 100% for you.
Watch your back, bitch. Yeah.
What surprises me about the technology reversion is the amount of companies that don't have call-in customer service.
That
they're going straight to email when you have like complicated questions and they refuse to even call you to help solve a problem. It's a mind fuck, especially these days. There are so many other companies in any atmosphere doing everything. You're not the only one. Customers have choices. Offers at least go like, hey man, you know what, I'll schedule a phone call, I'll call you in like 10 minutes and we'll go through your problem because you're having a hard time. That doesn't make sense. You're supposed to use technology to make things easier on everybody, not just your tech support people.
That's when people don't want to text, when they want to scream at somebody because they're angry that
their laptop mad.
Won't work.
Well,
sure,
even if they're not mad, I agree with you on the tech support side, but I'll admit also, it's the last thing I want to do is call you. And I would think maybe that's the norm. Like, provide me everything you possibly can so I don't have to call you.
Yeah.
But at some point, like when our video goes down, like we pay for our live streaming service and shit.
Yeah.
We pay a good fucking dollar for that. And can I call them? No. I have to go through 8 support tickets, and I'm fine with that if it's like efficient. Like I said, the last thing I want to do is call.
Right.
But like the other day, I'm trying to figure out this YouTube thing. We couldn't get it to go to both, and it's been a week long, 10-day long process because there's no opportunity to call.
Yeah, that's annoying. Like if you're customer service and you're on thread 15 or 20 or 23, and the customer's been going, hey, can we just call you? Like, you don't understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm doing what you're doing, but what you're telling me to do, but it's not working, and you're not understanding that. At some point, I need to just talk. Let me just talk to you. Well, we're not really set up for that. Well, all right. Guess what?
Thanks.
Here's all your shit back.
Thanks anyway. All right. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Send your feedback to feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com. You can send show ideas there if you want to. Just send pretty much everything. That's like the bucket for what you need to get to us. feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com. All right. Do we have a Twitter game today?
I do. If Warren does, his is probably better than mine because I really wasn't feeling it today.
I didn't want to hog it, so I was going to let you go.
Okay. Do you have one?
No, I didn't send it.
Okay,
already.
Well, then I got one.
All right. Twitter game is brought to you today by the Wine and Hop Shop. You can go to wineandhop.com, and they've been locally owned in Madison, Wisconsin for over 40 years. Most of their items ship within 24 hours, and BN listeners get $8 flat rate shipping on orders under 25 pounds. Just enter BN shipping in the notes field of the shopping cart, and then your discount will be taken after you check out. Madison residents, you can order your homebrew supplies online at wineandhop.com and then go pick them up at Working Draft Beer Company, which is pretty cool. They're located on Wilson Street right across from Central Park, and they will waive the shipping and give you half off your first beer. So it's a good deal.
Damn.
Go to wineandhop.com and check it out. What's our Twitter game today?
Well, you know, I was feeling a little bit lonely today, you know, in my house. I know, it's real weird, but it's out of the norm for me. No.
Did you roll away?
God, I wish you would run away, to be honest with you. I'm leaving. Okay, there's the door. it just takes a lot of my time. Very important work to do. So I thought about if you could give one person from history a hug, who would it be and why? Like a very caring hug, like an embrace, like a proper embrace. You know,
who would it be and why?
Yeah.
I like this. You were feeling lonely today.
Actually, I was just really fucking tired. I'm standing in the kitchen watching Alice whine at me for reasons unknown. I have no idea why.
Does anybody ever?
I'm tired, dude. What's the least amount of effort I can do? So that's why I was trying to defer to the old boy over there, Warren. Oh. But look,
hey,
the hug is fine. It'll be fine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not
who
all
did you want to hug?
Can be bangers. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it.
Juan.
Oh.
Juan. Because he'll fucking... I just really wish... I really wish a guy named Juan with a face tattoo would come and end my life.
I thought you said come and hug you. That'd be really nice.
I wish he just... But press the point of a knife into my throat until the skin pops.
Oh, gosh.
And then it comes out slowly the other end.
That's the only way he knows how to hug.
I really want that. I just want that for my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I think
tough week.
I've made a lot of friends with face and neck tattoos lately.
Yeah.
And it's really, like, desensitized me to face and neck tattoos. It's like, you're okay. Like, they're good people.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, so a lot of those stereotypes are really, like, disappearing.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be real. Stereotypes usually exist for a reason.
For a reason, that's right.
And there was a period of time that, like, for the most part, the type of people that are getting these face and neck tattoos were, like, you know, maybe not the type of people you wanted to hang out with. But the times, they are changing. Yeah. And even those people, they are changing. Like, some of them are just older now, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You're not talking about 20-year-olds here. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about, like, 30-year-old wrestling coaches.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're aging out of the game, dude. They're like, hey, man, I get, my knees are going. I can't be chasing after you for your wallet.
Yeah, they're just...
to Starbucks.
Yeah.
I got arthritis in my stabbing hand.
I had to retire.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do a little feedback. Feedback's brought to you today by the Beer Law Center. Go to beerlawcenter.com and check them out. They protect our trademark, and they can do that for you, too. They can do your brewery filings, especially if you're in North Carolina. And John's just a good guy. Go over there, beerlawcenter.com.
Did you do the feedback from last week? I know sometimes you don't for live read.
I did not.
Shows. Okay.
But leave the one in that you're talking about, the one that's about Russian River?
No, the one. So I did the one for last week. It was only one, so I didn't know if I should put it in the document. I forgot to text you
because
you don't want to take my phone calls.
It's all good. it's all good. I read them in here. Keep everything here that's here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're good. The first bit of feedback today is actually about our Russian River show, and I'll just give you a little background first. We challenged, surprised and challenged Beardy to a blind tasting. I so wish JP was there as
so
well. Yeah, for Beardy.
I don't remember what he's talking about. I had too many beers, I think, at that point.
The excuses are starting to fly already. Luckily for you, this listener has excuses for you as well. But we made him...
Genetic excuses.
Believe it or not, even though I'm usually the guy who likes to spring these things on y'all, this was a Vinny idea. And what we did was take one of his clear beers and one of his hazy beers, put them next to each other, blindfold Beardy, and make him pick not only his favorite of the two, but which one was clear.
Oh, my boy failed.
Oh, well, it depends on what you think of as a failure. Really, there is no right answer. Well, there's a right answer for one of those questions.
Correct. Yeah, it's Warren and I against every Haze bro in the world, and so my team can't lose, right, Warren?
So
okay,
his favorite beer,
yeah,
was the hazy beer.
You're a piece of dog.
And the beer he chose as the clear beer,
yeah,
was the hazy beer.
Oh boy,
yeah. But to be fair, the clear beer was a hazy beer that was Centrifuge. So it contained the flavor of a hazy beer.
Yeah, well, okay. All right.
So Clayton writes in. We've heard from Clayton before.
Clayton,
so,
my boy.
Yeah. So put your feet up or go get a beer. I don't know what.
Yeah.
He says, regarding Beardy's blind tasting at Russian River Brewing Company, there is no way that Vinny's hazy is the same as all other hazy beers if Beardy's description of the beer was accurate, and more bitterness can't be the only difference. He says, sure, Vinny did mention unmalted wheat and oats like you hear others mention, but maybe he's using less than others because it's not just our seeing haze that makes it taste different. It does, capital letters from Clayton, taste different. I mean, they did taste different, didn't they, Beardy?
No, they tasted very close to the same. Mm. That was the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were.
You can make a clear beer taste like a hazy beer. You add enough chalk and enough wheat and flaked grains. Mm-hmm. You can make a clear West Coast beer.
Okay. All right. Hang in there. Let's get through the rest here. Well, then we can dive into it.
Yeah. Stop being so angry, Warren.
He says, I describe hazy beers as tasting like pizza or bread dough absorbing all the other flavors. And then he goes on to say, it's basically true, since the majority of hazy beers are unmalted grain particulate and low flocculating yeast. Bread dough is unmalted grain and yeast.
You know how much...
And my experience backs that up, he says.
Mm. Well, so that's Clayton going, you can't tell me I'm wrong because it's my experience.
Right.
Which is very smart.
This man
is an expert online arguer. I've used that several times. That's my experience. You can't tell me I'm wrong.
Right. He goes on to say, on the Hop and Brew School podcast, my co-host Nick has talked about using some hop fractions to help provide haze, and higher hop polyphenols from large dry hop additions will inherently provide that too. So he says, I wonder how hazy, for example, Pliny and Blind Pig are before they get the Centrifuge. Basically, he says, I don't think it's apples to apples, and it sounds like Vinny has done hazy as correct as hazy can be. But the other question is, would you rather drink that hazy beer, I guess the one that you chose, Beardy, or the clear Pliny or Blind Pig beers? Hazy beers can be enjoyable, but at 8 to 12 ounces, they start to accumulate on the palate and gets more doughy than you think. I'm not opinionated. I'm right. From Clayton.
Well, Warren, answer the man.
Well,
question.
I would never say Clayton was wrong.
No.
About
yeah,
anything.
You better not say Clayton's wrong.
You can't. Yeah. He has a whole city named after him over here.
Right. Very close.
Yeah.
I would drink a Blind Pig or a Pliny all day over either of those two beers that I was picking between.
Convenient.
Well, I don't accept the premise of your answer or the question, because I feel like...
I just answered his question.
It has to be done... I think a better question for Clayton to ask is, we should have done it blind with one of those in there as well and asked him to pick his favorite.
Best of show,
like,
right?
Pick your favorite and pick the hazy.
Well, or favorite question, that would have been better.
It could, yeah, it could have been like, which is hazy? Okay, pick this one. Now, here's
now, which
two
is your
more.
Favorite, yeah.
Which are, yeah, yeah. But, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that's just kicking a man while he's down.
Well, and Vinny admitted to
putting
using
salt
the same.
In his own.
Vinny did put some salts in the both beers.
See?
He salted them the same.
Yeah.
You're
so
salty.
The mouthfeel and all of that's going to be the same, whether it's clear or not, because of all of the chalk that he added.
Well, but I think isn't the premise that the yeast in suspension and all that stuff in suspension adds mouthfeel that other stuff can't?
Well, no, the chalk also. If you put a lot of chalk in the
but
the
if
beer.
It's the same beer, but one centrifuged.
But I think if you're, it just depends on what your haze is coming from. Because I really don't think his haze that was in his hazy right. beer was coming from yeast. It was more like a protein driven haze.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So it's not going to yield that like yeasty flavor.
But those two, mm-hmm. but a protein driven haze is still not going to add mouthfeel.
I think it would
not as much.
Okay.
Not
it's
as much
a
as the
finer
yeast
particulate, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I tend to not to go to things I don't understand, so I just don't even drink them.
Yeah,
I don't get it.
Yeah, it's easy to make a clear beer taste like a hazy, but you can't make a hazy beer taste like a clear beer.
Yeah.
I was drinking two hazy beers.
Mm.
One was centrifuged.
Yeah.
So if anything, that only proves.
I feel like you made a hazy beer taste like a clear beer.
Yeah. No.
And you chose it as a clear beer. I'm sorry,
hazies,
but I feel like you chose it as a clear beer.
The only thing that proved is that a centrifuge cannot fix a hazy beer. They're just bad, no matter what you do. Just don't make it. Centrifuge won't help.
I don't know if that's what it proved.
So and then why? But then why
else,
was the
JP,
hazy beer
can we at
your
least,
favorite?
What?
Why was the hazy one of those two beers your favorite if they're both the same?
They were so close.
It was like a lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
I think you should go back and listen to the recording because I don't really remember him saying anything about a lesser of two evils. I remember him giving the description of why he usually likes a clear beer and that this particular beer had those attributes.
Hmm. So you're saying after the fact you would have given me permission to shit on Vinny's beer in his cool ship room?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. First of all, you would ask for permission? Just take
a
it.
A week beyond after being there.
Let's go back. Let's do another remote.
And then do all that.
Yeah. You're a bunch of jerks.
It'll be a remote detonation.
If nothing else, can we all just agree?
No.
Clayton's right.
The amount of pleasure I took out of the outcome of that test.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
That's legit.
I'm sure.
I looked at Vinny instantly. You can hear all this on the podcast too. I was like, Vinny, I loved you before, and God damn it, do I love you more now. I was like, I could not have asked for a better outcome.
Wow. This is what happens, dude. You can't enter these feats of strength and mind calisthenics that you have to do to get around this stuff without me, Warren.
What was I going to do? Jump in the cool ship?
you could just say, no, I don't feel good.
Oh, that's it?
So,
that's all it would have taken?
So you lost the stifle the stifle chug because you threw up with Dan Gordon.
It didn't throw
then
up.
Then you lost this debate now, and now, you know, now I don't know what's going
to
happen.
But see, Beardy is about good radio, so he knows that he had to do the things for the sake of the show.
Right. So. I knew I was going to look like an asshole. I said it right before I put the blindfold on.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just because I was wearing Abby's scarf.
Oh.
Well, I do thank you for participating in it, and I do think it made for excellent radio.
You're very welcome.
So, thank you, even despite the potential embarrassment.
Potential.
All right, let's get through this. We got to get to a break here so we get our guests in here. Matt writes in, hey, Justin and friends, unfortunately, I will not be able to make it to HomebrewCon this year, as well as BNA 14, but I'd love the opportunity to get raffle tickets to win that brew sculpture, the Brewing Network brew sculpture. Is there any way for listeners to get in the ring? I'm working on that, Matt.
I already won it.
Raffles are a tricky business. I'm working on whether or not there is a way I can offer tickets to folks that are not there. I'll let you know soon.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's a tricky business. It's different state by state, too.
Oh, the laws.
It's basically it can't be gambling. You can have raffles.
Yeah.
Can't be gambling. And certain states are like, well, to have any kind of raffle, you have to be a nonprofit. And we're not. I'm not selling, as of now, raffle tickets. I'm selling tickets to BNA 14.
Wait, the BN's made a profit?
And you get... I know, we should just be a nonprofit. I'm selling tickets to BNA 14, and then you get these raffle tickets for that. Like, the raffle ticket's free.
Right.
Anyway, Matt, I'm working on that, because I think it'd be cool if the whole Brewing Network had a chance to win the official Brewing Network sculpture. I think it'd be really cool. I just got to figure that out. So, hang in there. I started working on that. I've been talking to some folks and seeing if we can make it happen, so... Stay tuned to the show, and I'll let you know. Or stay tuned. Go. You can check out the ticket page for BNA 14. Just go to thebrewingnetwork.com and click on the event there. And if I can do it, there'll end up being an option there to get tickets.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Now, this last email is also about the Russian River show, but I did not get it before the show. But I can answer some of it, because it sounds like questions for Vinny. But I can give you like my own experience with when Vinny was kind of giving me the tour there.
Well, it's weird, because it came in after the show, because I did feedback for that show, I think, that Monday. And so it came in at some point between like Tuesday and this morning. So
okay,
a little late, but...
Well, I will answer what I can here. Victor writes in, assume this is for Vinny, how was the brewing and calibrating a very popular beer like Pliny into bigger batches? How many brews did it take? And has any of it been in the cool ship? He says, such a lovely lineup that's more readily available to us in Northern California. He says, I was able to take Pliny, Blind Pig, and Happy Hops, which is a great beer, to an Australian friend who owns a brewery in Todos Santos, Baja, Mexico. They were in heaven, from Victor. Okay, I can't answer all those questions, but I can answer some.
They died. They were in heaven, and I transcended this mortal coil to deliver beer to them.
And then they died.
And then they died again.
So he had to make some specific adjustments, obviously, to scale up to the new batch. And one thing that I thought was, ridiculous, but very, very Vinny Chalurzo, is he bought a mash grinder. What are they called?
I don't know what
mash
you're
grinder.
About.
You know, you
Ball
grind
masher?
The mash.
The mill.
The mill. He bought a wet mill.
Yes,
that's right. He bought a wet mill. But because he'd never used a wet mill before, and he needed to make Pliny like he needed to make it taste like Pliny, he was concerned that like the efficiency apparently jumps like by a ton when you move to a wet mill. Yeah. A lot less grain to get the same. Sugars that you need. So he bought a wet mill that would then function as both a wet and a dry mill, so that he could use it as a dry mill to start as he would slowly transit. This was just one of the things, obviously, he had to change. And then he admitted, he's like, I kind of got it right now. My efficiency has gone through the roof, which is going to save a bunch of money if you think of that over the course of the year.
Yeah.
So he's like, I may never use the dry mill again. And I didn't have the balls to ask, how much did you pay for this
100%.
short period of time of transition?
Yeah.
But it did go, the reason I say that's very Vinny Chalurzo is it just did go to show, like, quality is number one to this guy over and over and over again. And he felt the need to not completely change on his first brews like that.
You have a backup, man.
You know, because it's also a big brew house, right? So it's not like he wanted to dump, you know, I don't even remember how many barrels. Do you?
75.
Okay.
75, yeah.
You know, dump that because he switched over to a wet mill just like that.
Yeah.
But I did find it funny. Like, I'm just guessing in my head, what was that option? An extra 150 grand? You know?
Well, you just turn the water off.
Yeah.
And it's a dry mill. I mean, come on. It's not hard.
It can't be that hard.
Jeez.
They also switched to a whole cone hops in the world. They don't do any Whirlpool editions anymore. It's all in a hop back.
I see.
At the new brewery.
Okay.
That piece of equipment was pretty insane.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Obviously he had to make a few changes. I don't think it took them too long. They also put in a sensory lab where they're just constantly doing sensory, and they're doing a lot of triangle tests, he mentioned, like of three different versions of Pliny, you know, and maybe tweak one thing, and like, which one does everyone like? What does it taste like? As far as I know, you asked also, had he put any of it in the cool ship? As far as I know, he has not put any of it in the cool ship, but he has put Pliny in their open top fermenters, which are also pretty fascinating and amazing. They're just as wide as they are deep. I don't know, just looking down at it, it looks like you're looking into a spaceship. They're very cool. And he did try some of that, and he said that their triangle tests in the lab for that were pretty positive about using the open top fermenters. And I think he's hoping to do a lot of beers through those. So, I'm sorry I did not get this, or that you did not send it in time for me to get it to Vinny, but that's at least a little insight into how, some things he had to change, and is still changing in the new brewery to figure all that out. All right. We good?
Oh, we're good, man. I love that.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a break. Before that, go to NeshaminiCreekBrewing.com. Don't forget about Neshaminy Creek Brewing. They're great friends of ours and good people, and they've been brewing award-winning beers in Croydon, Pennsylvania since 2012. They're the proud winners of Philly Beer Scene Magazine Awards.
4 billion awards. Wow. 4 billion.
Four Philly Beer Scene Magazine Awards for Brewer of the Year and three for Brewery of the Year. They got a bunch of GABF medals. They got a big-ass tap room with 24 beers on tap, 18 of which are rotating and seasonal limited beers. Variety of beer styles from double IPAs to sessionable and poundable lagers, even oak fermented saisons and sour beers. And if you can't make it to Croydon, hit up their second location in Jenkintown called the Borough Brew House, which features a full menu and 22 beers on tap, including guest taps from local breweries, meaderies, as well as Pennsylvania cider. So like I said, go to check them out at NeshaminiCreekBrewing.com. And if you can stop in there, thank them for supporting this program.
That's true. They do a lot of concerts there. They do like a lot of like ska and rock and roll shows.
Oh, nice.
Kind of a lot in Croydon Town, I think, or Croydon or whatever it is.
This is Croydon and there's Jenkintown.
Croydon.
Okay.
So that's cool if you're like an East Coaster and into the whole music ex-scenester.
Yeah.
Head ska over to a thing.
I haven't been to a ska show in ever.
Yeah. Since never have I been.
In actual ever.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Ghost Town Brewing out of Oakland, California. I'm excited about that. We'll get some of their beer in our glass. So hang in there. It's the session, and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, this is Brendan from Central Coast Brewing. You're listening to The Session on the Brewing Network.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for hanging out with us. I won't give any spoilers, don't worry, but we were all just arguing about a Game of Thrones finale at the break there. Good topic of conversation.
Right. Yeah. Well, it shows that we are very, very into, you know, heady topics like that. Shows
right.
And shit. Like, that's a thinking man's show.
I will say that I never sat around talking about a show for so long after it ended. Like, when The Sopranos ended, I just was like, what the fuck? Like, fuck. Like, I couldn't even form sentences. And I sat with my friends last night. We sat there for like 45 minutes arguing about the end of that one. So, good stuff. We are here with Ghost Town Brewing Company. We've got head brewer Justin Burt in the studio with us. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you.
Good to see you. And then also the owner, Ryan Nosek, is hanging out with us. Hi, Ryan.
Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you guys in the studio. I've been to the brewery a couple of times. Really great location in Oakland. You guys, West Oakland, is that what you like to say, right?
Deep in the West.
Okay. It's a good spot. How many beers you guys got on tap there? I remember a pretty damn good selection you guys do.
I think there's, as of today, 18 different beers on tap.
Okay. Very nice. And it's all Ghost Town beers at your place?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. How long you been open now?
That tap room's been open for just about 14 months.
So okay.
We opened in March of last year, that location.
Where were you before that?
Just down the street on Union, it was a production-only facility, just a really small system.
I see.
We opened that in 2012, so we did that for quite a long time before we opened up the new taproom and brewery.
Oh, you did? Okay. I thought for some reason I had it the opposite, like you did that for a really short run and then expanded like faster than most people do.
No, unfortunately, it was the opposite.
Okay, okay. So you were at the production facility for a while, but then you just wanted a tasting room experience too?
I mean, we knew it was a crucial part of business for us, and you know, the best experience for our beers overall was to do it in our own setting.
Yeah.
Particularly for our location, we wanted to make it, you know, something that wouldn't feel exclusive, particularly for West Oakland. So mm-hmm. It was important for us to kind of keep it in West Oakland and allow people to come in and just have a bunch of beers by us.
Yeah, yeah. And then you got you have cornhole in there, right? You guys have games, which is cool.
Think of something, man.
Pinball, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, pinball too. That's right. I remember. Yeah, we did a little company outing there, and we totally took over your cornhole court. I got pissed off my employees because they were beating my ass. But yeah, okay. So then you grew into this. What was your brewery size at the first location?
It was a one barrel system.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So we used to we all had our full time jobs.
Okay.
We'd kind of brew on the weekends, and we would, just one barrel at a time until we sold out of that. And then we'd start brewing two, and then we sold out of that.
Wow.
Just keep going and going, and then eventually toward the end, before we closed that facility, we were brewing on that thing four or five times a day.
A day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, just,
damn. Justin, were you there at the first location too?
Yeah. I came on for about the last 8 months.
Okay.
While we were there, and then as we transitioned over to the new spot.
Okay.
Yes.
Did you know when you came on, like, that, hey, I'm only going to have to do this for, like, a few minutes, and then we're going to have a bigger location? Or were you like, hey, fuck this, like,
no,
four times a day?
Fully aware of what was about to happen.
So you were willing to put up with the punishment of four times a day?
Yes.
For a minute. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's rough, too.
That's the brewery world, but...
Yeah. That's true. You got to do what you got to do. Okay. And so then you found a great building, by the way, and I like the location. What size brew house did you get for that?
That's the 15-barrel brew house that we started with.
Okay.
We actually purchased it about a year before we moved. So we knew we wanted the new system. We got it, and then it just sat there dormant for about a year before we moved.
I see. Was it used, you say, or a brand-new system? What'd you do?
Brand-new system.
Okay.
Made in Santa Rosa.
Okay.
Stainless assets or whatever. So
got it.
Yeah, cool system. Served us pretty well so far.
Now, Justin, you used to brew at Black Diamond for quite a while, right?
Yeah, I actually started off over there. I interned there, did my assistant training with a couple of weeks with Derek Smith, fortunately, at New Orleans.
Yeah.
And then Paul Mallory took over, and I got 2 years of training under Paul Mallory.
Okay.
Which we have that collaboration with him on tap right now.
Yeah.
And then, he moved on, and I did about a good year and a half, you know, doing the things towards the end, and then obviously
as the head brewer when they sort of moved on for
well, Paul moved on, I took over head brewer from there, and then
what size brew house was that?
15 barrel brew house.
Okay. So not you know, was it very different than the one that you moved into at Ghost Town, or
completely? I mean, it was, you know, the pub style, all steam. Plus coming in there, all the SOPs are already written, everything was already dialed in. So coming on to the new system here now, it's a couple, you know, there's some things to learn. We have a all gas with calandria, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing I've ever used before.
Explain to our listeners what a calandria. I mean, I know what a calandria is.
I want to see if you know.
Sure. Asking for a friend.
Yeah.
No, it's basically, it's a cylinder that has heat pass through it, and as heat passes, you know, it's a heating source that's going to be right in the middle of your kettle,
mm-hmm.
ultimately, as opposed to using the jackets on the side or the bottom of it. And we use gas, so with that, it also tends to scorch or have boil overs more often, because with gas as opposed to steam, you're only on or you're off, right?
Okay.
Steam, you can dial your gate valve back a little bit and have some control while this. So it was a little bit of a learning curve going from like something like that, something like that. But, you know, I mean.
So your current, Ghost Town is gas.
Yes, Ghost Town is gas.
So, yeah. So you had to, did you scorch any beers your first couple times or
oh,
what?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, our first one was a complete dumper. 100%.
Oh, really?
I scorched my hand doing that one as well. So.
Oh, shit. Oh, no.
I was dropping some salt in and dropped the cup in, and some dumb reason.
You reach for
I
it?
I reach right fucking for it.
Because it's like, I know why. I would do the same.
No, dude.
Yeah, you just like, it's reactive.
Oh, and it was the first day. I was so nervous. All the guys are there watching to her just like, oh, let's do this. And
oh, man.
Yeah. You know, 2 seconds later, you're like,
Oh.
What the fuck did I just do?
Oh, no. All right. How bad was it? Like, wrap it up and go to the ER?
I didn't have to go to the ER. I pulled it off fast enough, but I kept my hand in a bucket of ice for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Should you have gone to the ER?
My wife said I should have.
But Ryan doesn't want to talk about it.
I've got plenty of photos.
We
bring it up a couple times a week.
So that was the...
What describe a characteristic of a scorched beer. Like, what would that have tasted like for me?
I mean, in a weird way, I mean, it's how smoke would, the chemicals in smoke would change over time. So I don't know, like, think like a burnt piece of metal or something like that.
Oh, really?
Or
okay.
Like, you know, the way like...
Homebrew.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Just like black char that's left over on like a piece of steel or something like that, and you sweep it off. It just has that just really just coaly smell. I don't know exactly.
That makes sense. The reason I ask is like melanoidins can be desirable, right?
Oh, yes.
But this is like past that.
Way.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm all about. Yeah, I get the melanoidin. No, this is actual like charred marshmallow type.
Okay.
Stuff, you know what I mean?
Like, not actually, good.
That's probably the best example. Just
that
black charred on a marshmallow.
Okay.
So then we figured it out. So
yeah, a couple batches like that, and then okay. So. When you left Black Diamond had closed, right?
No. I left a good year before they closed.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, just things were getting a little weird around there.
Yeah.
Know, with the ownership change and things like that. So.
Oh, so there... Yeah, I don't know if you mind me asking. So there was an ownership change. Because here's what I knew about that place. And this might be completely inaccurate. But it was owned by a family for years and years.
Yes.
It was kind of a pet project.
Mm-hmm.
They had success in other industries, and this was just a fun thing for them. They had a restaurant at one time, even in Walnut Creek, paired that down to just the brewery. But the brewery had been around for a while. And I guess what I thought was at the end that they were just like, I don't know, it's just a pet project anyway, like, I'm out of here. And they just closed it. But they sold it, is what you're saying, to somebody else?
Basically, the last year, they said they were going to sell it. And then they said if it didn't sell, they were going to close it by the certain date.
Okay.
And that was kind of the point where I decided to move on.
You got to start looking at that point, yeah.
Yeah. And I've been friends with these guys for a good year plus.
Okay.
And, you know, with death metal and music and all that fun stuff, it all worked out.
I see.
But ultimately, the threat was already out there, and the due date was already out there. They said...
So you might as well start looking, yeah.
Yeah. And the writing was on the wall. It was clear.
Okay. You know,
the place was... The owners didn't want to keep it around, obviously. And how are you going to work for a company if the owners don't even want to be there and they don't even have somebody to buy it?
So. And that goes downhill fast if you don't want to be there, too. So
right, exactly. Yeah. So it just became I'm fortunate enough to have worked under two really, really good brewers there.
Yeah, to get a resume of sorts.
Yeah, and, you know, get experience on the production side. But, yeah, at that point when they decided to sell it and kind of gave you a date,
mm-hmm.
it was basically, all right.
Got it. Do you know what happened to their whole brew house since then?
I've heard rumors.
Oh, okay.
I've heard like a local brewery bought all the tanks.
Okay.
They're doing a lagering project. As far as the brew house itself, I don't know where that went.
Got it.
There's some killer stuff in there, though, man.
I wish I had some cash. I'd have bought that up.
When they had the auction, we hopped online. We were trying to get it, and all of a sudden, 30 barrel fermenters were going for $40,000.
Wow.
Those are 10 years old. I don't know.
Is the new market that difficult to deal with?
Seriously. I'm like, and those are old school. They got the shadows. You know, we get a good 5 pounds of yeast cake up on top of those, which, you know, you don't want that for autolysis reasons and things like that.
Okay. All right. Well, I was just curious. We're not here to talk about Black Diamond, obviously,
for sure.
It's been a local brewery of mine for so long that I was just curious. I figured I'd ask you a little bit about it.
The way it all unfortunately ended, but, you know, owners had to do what they had to do. And
sure.
Everybody that worked there is working out of the breweries now, so it's pretty cool.
That's good.
It was still a small group. It was only 5 people.
So. Okay.
Yeah. Everybody's moved on.
And so you say you were friends with Ryan before.
Yes.
Are you still friends now that you work together?
100, even better.
Is that right?
Yeah. I think. I hope.
Good for you. Ryan's like,
Well, there's only one way to find out.
Buys me dinner.
Just kiss him. Just kiss your kiss right now.
That's what friends do.
Yeah. We'll see if there's a spark.
Right. Yeah. We'll be the judge.
What did you do before Ghost Town, Ryan?
Kissed boys. As a software engineer for about 20 years.
Okay.
Still do today, actually.
So, you still have that day job?
I'm the only one of the ownership group that still has a day job.
So. Okay. Got it.
But I do love my job that I do normally.
So, oh, good.
And then I kind of just help out at the brewery where I can. I do most of the design work for our labels and stuff like that.
Okay.
Social media stuff when I can. But, yeah, so.
And where did the Ghost Town theme and branding come from?
So I live in Ghost Town, Oakland. That's what the neighborhood I live in is called.
Oh.
And we started as homebrewers in my garage. Well, the kitchen one time before my girlfriend totally kicked us out of there.
Sure, that happens.
But then I went to the garage, and we homebrewed there for a number of years.
Okay. And she's missing now, and that's why it's called Ghost Town.
Yeah.
The coffin motif.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that is where the coffin motif came from. Yeah, it's a very certain little kind of triangular section of West Oakland. It's been called that for many, many, many years.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Got it. How long were you a homebrewer?
I don't know, what, 4 or 5 years, probably before we decided that it was a good idea to go pro.
Yeah. Did you enter competitions or anything?
Yeah. We've actually met a lot of people doing that stuff, like Paul from Standard Deviant. We'd, you know, enter homebrew competitions together, like Pilsner or Quell or whatever kind of stuff we could do.
But yeah.
That was always fun. We always had a great time.
So was it one of those things where, you know, all of your friends and everybody say, oh, this stuff's so good, you guys should go pro? Or was it more just that you guys were like, well, this is a fun hobby, why don't we try to make a dollar too?
Yeah, well, it wasn't so much people saying it was so good.
Mm-hmm.
It was more like we really just enjoyed doing it.
Okay.
Mm. I mean, the whole kind of backstory for us was we were just looking for a way to finance our rehearsal space. Because we were in a band.
Oh.
We were like, man, this is so expensive. We got to find a way to pay for this.
Okay.
We'll brew some beer on the weekends and sell it, right? It's super easy. And we'll just pay for this rehearsal space.
Yeah. Wait. So, like, the building that the brewery was in would be the rehearsal space?
So, like, literally when we bought our warehouse, the first thing we built was the rehearsal studio.
Got it.
So smart. Before we got anything else, we're like, all right, we're all set. Well, let's go buy some stuff to make beer now.
You went to the Crosley School of Business, I think. I would have done the same thing. Like, we'll figure out the rest later. Let's do the fun part right now.
No, but we always loved beer. We really enjoyed making it. And we still, the first beer we ever made, we still do in production today, so.
Justin, were you in this band also? No.
Okay. I was not in the band.
So how long did the brewery remain the rehearsal studio? The whole time you guys were there, or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still there today.
It's still your rehearsal space.
Yeah.
Okay. But now you can have, so in
the
essence,
no longer there yet.
But in essence, your project worked. I'm assuming that the brewery, even though it's moved, still pays for the rehearsal space.
It does, but we practice never now.
So. Okay.
Yeah, the beer became more of the passion than the music, probably.
Okay.
Plus, we can't really leave anywhere now, so it's a little trickier.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. But still, I mean, I'm looking for the bright. I feel like you succeeded. You know, maybe you're not a rock star or you're not on tour, but if your goal was to pay for the rehearsal space, it kind of worked, right?
It worked for a long time.
Yeah.
We're by no means bummed by how everything ended up.
So. Okay. But the band is still around, just
no.
Not a lot. Oh, no. Okay.
It's still there. We know we'll go on there and mess around every once in a while.
I see. Is that the only use of the old warehouse space, or do you use that for, you know, cold storage or anything else?
No, right now it's just an empty skeleton with the rehearsal studios.
Okay.
We got plans for something in the future. So.
Okay.
It's a ghost town in there.
Yeah. Look at Beardy.
Look at that. Yeah. I'm paying attention.
He's been holding on to that for 20 minutes.
Oh, I wrote a lot before. Just waiting to drop.
Yeah. Now, the building you have now is pretty cool. I guess I wouldn't quite call it a co-op, but you have like a coffee roastery next to you, too. Is it a roastery or? There's like a coffee thing right next to you, right?
Sweet Maria's, they are like a kind of like homebrew style coffee roastery.
Okay. Yeah, they were like one of the first to do mail order green coffee. Yeah. So when we started more coffee, more beer, Sweet Maria's was like the, you know, that's who you had to beat. SEO and all that kind of shit. Like they were, you know, they were selling the roasters, they were selling all the beans, they were doing all that kind of stuff.
I see. So they weren't roasting themselves. You buy from them to do it yourself.
I think that they may have been roasting.
They had some roasters for sure because we could smell it quite often. But they've since vacated that space and moved down the street.
Okay.
And we actually took that space over for some new projects that we're working on. So, cool.
So well, that's why I brought it up because even when they were there, that's the last time you gave me a little tour, Justin. The landlord or them was still cool enough that you put a big cold box in the back, even when they were still in the front.
Yeah, we rented the back half while they were still kind of you know, in transition of moving out.
Got it.
So,
okay.
Yeah, we erected a big cold box back there.
It is a big cold box. Yeah. But that's smart. Like, you guys have learned from other breweries or something, I assume, that, like, that's one of the things you shouldn't skimp on if you expect to be a growing brewery, right?
We tried to skimp initially, and we learned very quickly that it wasn't going to work. So we were very fortunate to have a space that close to us.
Okay.
That we could put that cold storage in.
So you started, in other words, you started with the cold box that's just in the tap room, and then quickly realized, oh shit, that's not going
to
work.
Well, we kind of knew from the first space, because we had a little cold box, and we used to pack that thing to the gills. It was bursting at the seams. So we're like, oh, when we move to the new space, we'll get two cold boxes that are, you know, four times the size. We'll be fine. What, you know,
right.
Once that 60 barrel fermenter came in, we were like, this is never going to work.
Got it.
So yeah, that's where we put the new cold box in. We can fit tons of beer in there.
Yeah. I was impressed by that. And you even have room to grow just in general. My guess is you've probably already added fermenters since I was there a year ago or something, because you had room for it.
We've ordered them.
They
have not arrived yet. But yeah, we have a couple lagering tanks. We've got some fooders. We got a couple things coming in pretty soon here.
So, okay.
Yeah.
You're really growing into the space there. How much of the beer would you say you sell on site versus accounts? Do you have an idea?
Probably about 60-40. We're doing about 60 in-house.
Okay.
Percent out.
So that must have, if you don't mind me saying or asking, like, that must have really changed the books for you. Like you said, you kind of knew from a business perspective that you needed an on-premise sales. So if you say to me now that 60% is being sold there, which obviously is good for you and the margins are better, that must have really changed your lives in a way.
I mean, yeah, it changed everything. We were 100% distro before. So
okay.
Being able to have, again, that no middleman kind of, you know, people come in.
Yeah.
Get $5 pints, because we can price it whatever we want.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, all of our beers are super affordable at the space, so it's been great.
That's good.
And it opened up a whole revenue stream that we didn't have.
Yeah.
And it allowed us to do a lot more interesting, cool stuff than we could before, so it's great.
And, you know, I've been reading a lot about this. Everyone knows, like, all the changes that are happening, and it's really difficult for breweries if you're 100% distribution. It's very, very difficult for mid-size and larger breweries right now as the industry kind of plateaus, that a lot of people are saying that the only way you're kind of, I guess nothing's a sure thing, but at least close to a sure thing is to be a small local brewery like you, at least right now, as things are like kind of plateauing and like shaking out a little bit. You know, if your distribution channel changes and you can't sell on site, you're kind of fucked. If you're only fighting for tap handles and shelf space, you're kind of fucked. But having a presence like on site is very different, and you have a real chance to succeed.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The model, you know, bars and restaurants went from, you know, stable tap handles, the same beer every time, to what's new, what's new, what's new. What's
yeah.
new? And for a small brewery, that's really tough to do as well. I mean, even the big guys have a problem with that. So, yeah, having a place where people can come in and get your beer is huge.
Yeah. I was just reading, I think it was like a Draft Magazine article, and they interviewed something like 5 or 6 breweries that have closed, that closed last year. And one of the breweries, I forget where they were, but they said they even started with the model that they were going to make a new IPA every month. So they knew about this new, like this rotating thing, right? This whole, you're not going to get a tap handle. It's what's the next big thing. So they opened with that model even, and they still had to close because even though they had a, hey, this is our next thing, the tap handle might have moved on to somebody else's next thing. So they still couldn't get enough tap handles, even though their model was to try to accommodate this, like, give me the new, give me the new, give me the new. And so it's really difficult for everybody.
Well, when we started, we had basically core beers. We're like, these are the beers we're going to brew. This is what we want to do. And we found out that it was really more of a nice mix. You know, pare back some of the core beers.
Okay.
Add a lot of rotators to, and try and satisfy what the account really kind of wants. If it's a rotator, cool. Like, we got a rotator for you. Like, hazies, whatever.
Okay.
But if you want that constant tap handle, that, you know, West Coast IPA every week, you know, we have offerings in that space as well. Obviously more limited.
Sure.
But we think it's a nice mix that helps kind of all work.
Yeah.
As opposed to just one model or the other.
Right.
It's a pretty good take. I don't think we've really talked to anybody who's trying to brew beers for tap rooms
for their customers,
for what they can sell, right? It's, you know, you hear about like the end consumer, oh, well, maybe, but it's maybe people coming in, but for people who have empty tap handles and specifically to what they want, mm-hmm. At least no one's never talked
about. Not on here, but yeah. So I think you're right. And interestingly, it's just more of a service model, like with any product. Like when you're designing software, you would absolutely cater to whatever your client wants. And so in this case, of course, your clients are twofold. It's let's say one of them's me as a retailer, but the other client is everybody in my tap room. But you still, and I think JP's onto something here, you're going to come to me and say, well, what do you want? Like, do you want me to change the beer every single week? Do you want the same thing like that? You're just being customer centric, even in the terms of your retailer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listening to what, you know, our taproom customers say, what our retail customers say is huge. And I don't think we make any decision without taking that into account.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about one of the beers in our glass right now. We've got one of your pale ales, Locrian Pale Ale. Which I'm on my second one, by the way. I had one in the first segment, and I went right back to it for this one.
So it's the darker of the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, Justin, tell us about this beer.
Locrian Pale. Well, this is one of the original four recipes from the Ghost Town days on the one barrel system.
Okay.
But this is good old, just classic West Coast Pale Ale, Cascade Centennial. Nothing too crazy with the hops, anything like that. Mm-hmm. Little CTZ for bittering. Keep the malts pretty simple. You know, just some two-row, some crystal, some wheat malt.
As simple as Warren.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's handsome. It's kind of
simply
like
handsome.
This type of beer is supposed to be like that, right? It's like you don't need to dissect it, but you still need it to be clean.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, we want that, you know, mid 5.5% range, so you can have a few of them. Slight hop aroma, but you know, it's about a pound per barrel at the dry hop that we do for it, so it's not excessive, but
okay,
you know, it's but yeah, it's just
like a real pale ale.
That's
the masquerading as the pale ale.
Yeah. I mean, trust me, we do some other pale ales that will dry out, we'll dry hop with 3 pound, you know, we'll screw around with them, but this is our go to pale ale. That's just kind of a classic. Get your old school hops in there. Mm-hmm. You know, the traditional people can enjoy it. We enjoy it. This type of thing we like to go back to.
Yeah.
But yeah, to me, I mean, this beer is a little bit, it's more about the simplicity. Simplicity.
You're okay.
Yeah.
But, wait till the end of the show. It'll get worse.
Yeah.
What's the crystal in the beer?
How'd you know?
That's why it sells so well.
I love
it. Justin's had two already.
Mm-hmm. It's for a long time, it's been a Patagonia C15 at about a 5% rate.
Okay.
But unfortunately, due to some issues, we haven't been able to buy their malts. So we've recently switched over to some European crystal malts that are about C30 and dropped it down to about a 3% range.
Okay.
And we're achieving pretty much the same results that we feel.
So you can, that's just an easy like transition. If it's a higher malt number, you just reduce the amount and the flavor's about the same?
We found the same. Yeah. It wasn't too noticeable just because I think the dry hop will kind of take over that a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit more of a color thing and maybe a mouthfeel thing to a touch, but as far as attenuation went or mm-hmm. anything like that, it didn't really affect it. So.
And you said some wheat too?
I think it's about 4% wheat.
Is that just mouthfeel or what's that?
Honestly, that was the original recipe and I didn't want to touch that one, so that we kind of kept that in there. We don't use any dextra pills or anything like that either, so maybe a little.
Yeah.
A little extra protein, a little foam, you know, high retention for that.
Got to give the beer its gains, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little protein.
A little bit more dynamic range, you know, a little bit of head retention. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would throw a bag of wheat in, too.
Basically, yeah, I think that's pretty much why we still keep it there. But there was a couple original recipes that we didn't want to alter too much.
We wanted
to just scale them up and, you know, get the newer versions of the hops, you know, change a couple techniques to it. But mm-hmm. as far as like the malts went and all that went, we wanted to keep that as true as we could to what we had been, these guys were brewing 2 years before I came on.
You know? Yeah.
Delicious beer.
It is a nice beer.
I like it. Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, then something you can't see, for you, those of you at home, it's just brilliant. It's beautiful, beautifully clear.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very satisfying when you have a pale ale that's just crystal clear.
How are you clearing it?
Biofine.
Okay.
100 milliliters per barrel.
I bring it to the Scientology department, and they make it clear.
Yes.
Yeah. They berate it. I mean,
it totally tastes like a clear beer.
Yeah.
I would know.
You think so?
No Thetans in here, dude.
Nobody trusts Beardy anymore. Yeah.
I really like the malt character. The wheat and the European crystal malt made me think it was almost stylistically trying to be an English pale.
Oh, okay. Right on.
Yeah, so I was thinking the same thing. I also think that I love that you just use the traditional sea hops because you get that out of it. I don't know if it's so many people, maybe you can help me answer this, if so many people have just stopped using crystal altogether in some styles like this, or I don't know what, but I agree that it has a character of like an English pale ale while still being a West Coast pale ale because of those sea hops, those damn great sea hops, I think.
Yeah, well, you're... Question with the crystal?
Yeah. Do you think that's something that brewers are doing with pale ales? They're just like not putting crystal in anymore, or am I just missing the mark?
I think here in the Bay Area, yes.
Okay. Okay.
So the collaboration we have on tap, we have some Care Munich and some things. I've never used Care Munich in IPA in my life.
Okay.
But ultimately, on our typical West Coast IPAs, or hazy IPAs, you eliminate crystal, or if we do, do a crystal 10, something super light.
Got it.
Less than 2%, and that's just to give this little touch of body in the background, a little mouthfeel in the background to it.
Yeah.
But, you start getting a little heavy on the crystals, and obviously it's going to affect the hop aroma and the hop flavor.
The
caramel malt's going to disrupt the citrus and all these other little things that you could possibly get from these hops.
Yeah.
Therefore, I feel like, Crystal and Cascade or Crystal and Centennial could come off a little Englishy because the caramel and all that could be considered biscuity or something like that, and
I also think so. I'm agreeing with everything you're saying, and I think because of maybe the shift, my first sip was a little sweet when I had my first pint, and I kind of had to remind myself. Oh, wait, but that's kind of what a 5.5% pale ale tastes like. Because if you put it next to a bunch of other ones now, which maybe aren't even to style, is kind of what I'm saying, is you almost have to remind yourself, actually, if you order a style, and that's it.
Yeah.
Right?
Not a session IPA.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a session IPA.
There you go.
Dry hop. It's not...
And that, see, this, and I'll never say it again, but this is where JP's like, right.
Whoa, hey, yes!
where he's, I'm like, oh, I like these session IPAs, and he's like, no, fuck that, because it's like a pale ale, but is it a pale ale, or is it an IPA? And then the styles do become a little clouded, and then I have to be reminded that this is a pale ale.
Well, and I had a pale ale someplace a couple weeks ago. It was a session IPA.
Yeah.
It gets confusing for the person inputting the information, right? It gets confusing for the publican. It gets confusing for the public, and then styles don't mean anything.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's a ghost town of information.
No, it wasn't good.
Wow.
Man, why did they like Beardy's but not yours?
No.
I guess you're not right anymore.
Yeah.
Right that one time.
Yeah. Way to fuck that up, JP. Yeah.
I have a ghost town of personality.
that one's good.
Yeah. All right. Good.
All right. Yeah. That's a nice beer.
On the session IPA, I do feel session IPAs are way more bitter than these, right? They're drier and they're more bitter. So
yeah.
You might get more aroma, but...
I think they should be drier, and I think it's more hop flavor than bitterness. In my perfect world of session IPAs, or at least when they kind of first started to catch on, that's, I think, how they were. And then now it's like, it's just a light, it's just a little IPA.
Or I don't know, maybe the IBUs aren't higher on a session IPA than this, but the perceived bitterness is because you have some crystal in here, because you have some balance.
Got it.
The problem,
I don't know, that's what I think.
Problem's ABV, right? So where does it hit after that 5 line?
Right.
If it's below 5, it's a session IPA. If it's above 5, it's a pale ale.
Okay.
Because you can't call a session beer over 5 a session beer.
Well,
according to what I hear.
I was going to say, depending on the standard, right? Because people do it all the time.
I mean, you tell me what to do.
I mean, pale ale's what, like 4.6, something like that, to 5.6? Isn't there like a percentage?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. Pale ales dip into the fours. I think it's 4.8.
I think so too, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know, man. It's just the pale ale should have some sweetness to it. It should have some body to it.
Yes.
It shouldn't just be dry and just hop water.
Right.
And that's what, and some people get confused. And I wonder what it is on the marketing side. If it was intentionally, I made this session IPA, but I'm going to give it some accounts as a pale ale and some accounts as a session IPA because pale ales sell differently here. I don't know if there's like this kind of, this kind of meta classification in some breweries or not. I don't know.
It should
be. I made session IPAs, and I never call them session IPAs anymore.
What do you call them?
Because I have called it a throwback IPA.
All right.
I like that. Yeah.
All the way back to 2016?
Like, yeah. Way back.
Yeah, to last Thursday.
Yeah. Way back.
Because you throw them back? Is that?
Yeah.
Is it like a little rate? Like
no, I don't know. It's
a
like
pun or something?
Just for me as a consumer, I avoid session IPAs like the plague.
Yes.
Because they can be so hoppy and no body and just totally out of balance and really not pleasant to drink.
Yes, I agree.
So.
Okay.
So I kind of really like if I make a beer that's in that alcohol range, but it doesn't adhere to hop waterness, then I try to think creatively about what we can call this thing.
I see.
We haven't made one in a while, but I used to have this beer called Dry Diggins, and it was the same. Yeah. It was like an IPA, but it was super low in alcohol. But I didn't want to call it a session because everyone's like, oh,
Do you think your consumers didn't like you calling it a session IPA, or that was just you? Because I thought they sold for a minute.
Well, the three people at the brewery that ordered it all the time, I could have called it like a purple dinosaur.
Didn't matter.
They would still order it.
Okay.
But the salespeople could not sell that thing to save their lives.
Oh.
Like, it would never sell outside the tap room.
Is the session IPA moniker gone? Do you guys have that? Know that, too, that you can't sell a session IPA anymore? I feel like 5 minutes ago that was the popular beer before the hazy.
Yeah. I don't see them anymore. I think.
I guess not.
Carl's Mosaic Session's the only one I still see around.
Okay.
On a regular basis.
I haven't even thought about that. Actually,
It's a dying. To throw it out there. So is the Brutes. They're a dying breed.
Well, wait, which one?
Brute.
The Brutes.
Those
are not the island.
Another short one.
Yeah.
A short one.
another short one.
Isn't all day IPA a session IPA?
Yeah. That's
everywhere.
Who makes all
day? And isn't and actually
we're talking craft beer here, by the way. First of all,
yeah, I support craft.
But Beardy actually makes a good point.
Never
a
say that.
A ton of the growth that founders saw in 2018-2019. In fact,
that's how they got
all of their growth is on that beer.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But maybe it doesn't say the words session IPA on it.
Maybe.
You know, and like just while. Literally that it's that like term.
That's what it was. Right at the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. Like a really affordable 50 pack. Yeah. Or like Easy Jack is still available. It's at least in their variety pack.
Oh, okay.
So Founders All Day IPA label just says session ale.
Session ale.
So they have IPA and session, but it's not a session IPA.
Right.
So
it means nothing.
They hate
it
means pale.
Except to the consumers, the fact that it means nothing is why it works for them.
They know the word session and the word ale.
Yeah.
So it's delicious.
Or they know IPA and then they know session.
Actually, right? I just think it's that anybody who's like, wait, I can drink all day?
Yeah.
I'll buy that.
Yeah, it's like a note from your doctor. It's like, it says on the label all day.
Yeah.
Bursa, stop getting on my ass.
The rules.
Yeah, but sir, this is a school zone. You can't be drunk and naked here. Don't tell me it says all day.
That's all day.
This is where I do drinking.
How long have you been drinking?
Read the box.
I built this school.
All right, let's talk about this other beer we have in our glass before we got to get to a break, too.
Oh, sure.
Which I think you've jumped in. Speaking of the difference in styles, now we've jumped up to a double IPA. And this is your Death Rattle.
Yes. This is our Session Triple IPA.
Session Triple IPA. Just as brilliantly clear as the pale ale, but what I was trying to say is a lighter in color.
No crystal malt.
And that's the omission of the crystal? Okay.
Yes, sir.
So tell us about this beer.
This beer is pretty much all two row. I think 2% dextrose, and that's about it for the malt bill. We do a nice heavy dose of Dr. Rudy for bittering it, New Zealand hop.
I've never heard of that hop.
That's... I
We also call it Super Alpha.
Super Alpha.
Okay.
Yeah, the doctor is the name.
Like, as in Dr. Rudy?
Dr. Rudy. Yep.
What a cool name. Okay. Well,
that's why I got some. No. Yeah. I fell in love with this as a bearing up. I don't know. Honestly, no true reason why. I think I just had it instead of CTZ for a little bit.
Okay.
It's just kind of one of those. We use that as a bittering, and it's a kind of a late Whirlpool edition as well, just to get a little oomph to the mouthfeel. But very simple. Nice heavy dose, about 10 IBUs at the start of boil, mm-hmm. 10 IBUs of Mosaic at 10, and then we get about another 60 IBUs at Whirlpool with outer ratio is about 1.5 pounds per barrel.
Okay.
You know, and that's a nice blend of Simcoe, Mosaic, and Dr. Rudy. And then we dry hop it in the two stages. Since obviously we don't reuse the yeast off this, we hit it at about 48 hours into fermentation with about 20 to 30% of the dry hop ratio, and then we'll finish it off towards terminal. We dry hop all the beers warm. Not worried about
warm as in like 68.
Warm as in 68.
Okay, yeah.
Warm as in 68, and we harvest at 68.
Why do you say obviously don't reuse yeast? Because it's all tired out after fermenting a double IPA?
Anything above 7% we try not to use just because, it's going to tire yeast out. Your viability is going to go down. Vitality is going to be stressed out with mm-hmm. it. So it's just not going to be a healthy yeast. You don't want to keep reusing it. So that's one nice thing, as far as getting into the yeast thing, it's... We have our cycles where we always have our 6%, 6.5% IPAs or a pale ale every week.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your yeast beers. So these guys, since you can retire the yeast earlier, you can introduce hops earlier and try and get a little more of that flavor profile with the yeast bonding with certain hops.
Well, so why is that part? Are you saying that because the yeast will just be a mess of hops if you wanted to reuse it? Like, is that what's happening? That's why you can...
Yes, it would be a mess of hops, 100%.
Because as the yeast starts to drop out, it's going to take all those hops with it, and then you don't want to reuse that yeast full of hops.
Yes, yeah.
I see. Okay.
And then also the yeast is already stressed enough where we wouldn't reuse it.
Anyway, okay.
And it also helps with turnaround time, diastole rest and little things like that. We started introducing that earlier. We can get the beer turned around a little bit quicker. But we find that also lends to a... just a deeper, the way the things in the yeast, will bond with the hops. It'll give you more of a flavor profile that will come out.
I see.
3 weeks later, once it's crashed, once it's all settled out, you get this nice aroma, but you're going to get a flavor that's just going to match it if that's not more powerful than it. And then, with the double IPAs, aroma's killer, but it's a little harder to achieve with the higher alcohol. But if you can get that mouthfeel and that body to mm-hmm. kind of live up or be better than that aroma, that's what you're going to remember towards the end of the beer. Halfway through a pint, the aroma is going to become more mute and you're going to be more focused on the flavor profile. So we find that, the earlier we can get the hops in there,
the better.
Yeah.
Okay. And what'd you say the alcohol was on this?
8.6.
8.6. Okay.
Yeah. 7. Super lean. About it is. Do you calculate this? Yeah. So.
Do you experience? I'm asking a question that I'm just like learning about this phenomena, even though it's been around a while. But we just did a topic on hop and brew school, and
Vinny was talking.
No, that one I know.
It's weird.
Yeah. Hop creep.
Oh yeah, hop creep.
And I'm curious. So, and I guess hop creep is this idea that when you dry hop, you end up increasing the amount of fermentables in some way, and it's debated a little bit how that happens. And in other words, your ABV goes up even with that. Is that something that you experience with a beer like this, even as you're putting the hops in while the yeast is still active?
I'm sure it is. We can't test for it because as of right now, actually, we took a really cool seminar a couple of weeks back on hop creep.
Yeah.
And they're starting to study the actual sugars that are found in hops.
Yeah.
And obviously, they're going to change from harvest to harvest year to year. But they were able to break down, it's your sucrose, maltose.
Well, here's what and you should not take, nobody listening should take my word for this. You should go back and listen to our Hop and Brew School podcast about it. But what I was hearing that the research so far is that it's not, it's enzymes that are breaking down sugars even further.
Well,
that's resulting in hop creep as opposed to adding more sugar. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because it might not.
No. Ultimately, They say if you get up to a 5 pound per barrel dry hop ratio, you can almost add 1 degree Play-Doh of sugar back to your beer from the hops themselves. That's how much hops. So that's a new study that they're – this is not things homebrewers will be able to get, but
professional brewers. Yeah, yeah, these amounts, yeah.
They're going to start breaking down the sugar contents in hops very soon here.
Interesting.
Which plays a big role in hop sweetness.
Yeah, yeah.
But then hop creep, yes. You're absolutely right. It is the enzymes. And then they do start to break down these sugars. And to me, that a lot of that comes – it's going to come down to your yeast health, your dry hop temperature, and things like that. Like the healthier your yeast, the healthier all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get through that process a little bit quicker. Get your diacetyl rest through. Do all
okay.
That. But yeah, hop creep is 100% a real thing.
And so from a calculating your ABV, for example, on a beer like this, your brewing software – let's call it Beersmith because they're a great sponsor. Let's say you're using Beersmith. And you put in your IBUs and you put in everything. And then you think – and it tells you what your ABV is going to be. With a large charge of hops like a double IPA like this, it goes up from whatever that calculation is, doesn't it?
Correct.
Your ABV? Okay.
From what we just found out this last year or two.
Yes. So you might have said – your program might have said, well, this beer is going to come out at 7.5 and then it comes out at 8.9. Or something like that.
Well, they say 1 degree Play-Doh max, so you're looking
for, I see, okay.
Maybe 0.5% if that.
Oh, okay. So,
but the software won't account for that.
Okay.
No,
and neither will the hydrometers. Because unless you add that.
Unless we know what sugars we're actually trying to break down, we'll never know.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Because brewers calculate the ABV based on the starting gravity and the final gravity. So if you add sugar in between those from hops or whatever.
Understood.
Yeah, it's not going to count.
So it has to be tested post fermentation, post dry hop, post every your ABV then has to be tested at packaging
in a lab, like
in a lab to see how much it crept.
You're right, exactly. You see what the true alcohol content is.
Got it.
But the TTB doesn't barrel test any barrel aged beers, and there's always alcohol fluctuations there.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, I was just curious because it's been this topic that keeps coming up, and then this is such a great hoppy beer. I just was wondering if you guys are kind of dealing with that too.
Honestly, it's one of the coolest topics, in my opinion.
Okay,
I think hop creep is one of the number one problems with a lot of IPAs people not giving the proper time. And then also the fact that we're able to now start testing for sugars and brewers can know the sugars in their hops and they can start – you know, manipulating beers better with those sugars.
Yeah.
In 3-4 years, these are going to be numbers that we have.
Yeah.
Like when we get an analysis of a hop, you know, we're going to have all this broken down.
I think
that's really incredible.
That is. Yeah.
I think that's cool. But can just as a plea to the industry, which you guys are definitely not you. Could we keep those numbers just to ourselves? And not put them out into the world for
for consumers?
Yes.
We're putting
because
it on the can.
I think they well, that actually might be really good marketing. But I mean, cause nothing kills any joy faster than, you know, I can check off how many sugars I got on Untappd on this thing.
And
this is just going to destroy everything.
Like when
take all the fun out of it.
Yeah, like there was a time when IBUs was not a common term.
No, it meant literally nothing.
Give me your beer with the most hop sugar in it.
I think this has 47 microjoules of hop sugar. Yeah. I mean, I'm not an expert, but that's what I'm calibrated to, so I feel like I want my money back.
Hop creep is the next popular style, actually, is how much hop creep did you have? Hazy, not...
It's perceived hop
creep. That's what it'll be. Yeah. That's, of course...
Yeah.
That's
I need to adjust my palate.
It's exactly what it'll be.
You can just call it creep. Be like, really enjoy a lot of creep.
There you go.
More creeps.
That's true.
Picture of JP.
Yeah.
We can.
It's true, hopping up and down.
All right, I'm going to get us to a break because we've got some more beer to try from these folks. So go to ghosttownbrewing.com. You can learn a little bit more about Ghost Town and then hang in there with us because we'll be right back with more. It's The Session.
This is Matt Reynoldson from Firestone Walker Brewing Company, and you're listening to The Session on the Brewing Network.
All right, welcome back, and thanks for hanging out with us. I appreciate that. Also, I would appreciate it if you go over to smartbrewkit.com and check out iDip, the smart brew water testing kit that incorporates a revolutionary photometer system, which is the first and only one on the market with its own app. You can use it for home or in commercial settings, and it takes great water to make great beer. You got to remember that. So it's the only meter on the market that runs water tests with no math needed on your part. Yeah, it's built for me, I'm pretty sure. It can test over 40 different water quality tests, four come preloaded with the device, and then more are available. You can test for total alkalinity, chloride, calcium hardness, pH, sulfate, and more. Just 4 milliliters of water needed for each test. And if all of that is not good enough, there's a Brewing Network special. So podcast listeners, just enter code TBN10 at checkout. That's TBN10 at checkout, and you're going to save $10 on either the standard or advanced smart brew testing kit. Order now and make this futuristic technology part of your brewing process. Just go to smartbrewkit.com and check it out. Water matters, right, Justin? You can't get a fuck with your water.
Oh, we got East Bay Mud out here, man. Best water in the world.
We're lucky. No, I mean, you have to have sex with your water.
Yeah. That's it.
Penetration with your water is great.
You do a lot of water treatment in the brewery?
Just carbon filter for right now.
Okay. Because EB mud water is good, you're saying?
Yeah, it's just, you know, we're filtering out the chlorine and the chloramines, but, you know, got that chloramine 2, or, yeah, T2 or 2, that's coming in the water pretty soon here that, carbon's not going to be able to filter out, but...
Oh, okay.
Do some research on that if that's in your water, if you have bad water.
Where did you hear about that, this coming?
Last summer I took a little course at Davis, just a weekend course, and we were talking about, you know, water and the new products being introduced to water for, you know,
for public safety.
Public safety.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. But yeah, ultimately, like, I think it was it's either chloramine 2 or chloramine T. I forget the actual one, but it was a newer one that was being introduced to like really bad water that they said carbon and all that.
We can't even take
right.
out.
Right.
That's interesting.
But it's fine for your body.
It's fine for your body. Oh, yeah, drink it all you want.
Sure. It's to mind.
Know your water, like you said, man. If you just got basic chlorine, chloramine, mm-hmm. you know, carbon filters.
Did they tell you how you're going to deal with chloramine, too? Are you ahead of the curve already, or you're still figuring it out, too?
Well, we're in the small process of expanding, and we're going to go RO once we get onto the new larger system.
And then build it back.
Yeah, so from there, we don't have to... Yeah, that's pretty much... From my understanding from this course, it was only a weekend course, but the guy knew what he was talking about. So
yeah.
That seemed to be the only way to truly get rid of this new chemical that they're adding to the
water. Wow.
Got it. Okay.
That's not going to be expensive or anything.
Right? No. We're also joined now by Jason Gavin, also from Ghost Town Brewing Company. He's hanging out with us, so I just wanted to welcome you to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. I got three of the guys from Ghost Town. Wait, did you just say you're expanding like another brew system, another brew house?
Yeah. No, we're in the process of, we've been on this 15 for last 2 years, and we're already at the point it's we're looking into a 30 barrel, four vessel, and then we got a few more tanks coming in.
Okay. Will you swap out the 15 for the 30 in your current space?
Yes. So
and you guys are growing fast over there.
Yeah, it's happening pretty quick. So we got some, like you said, we have our phases that we're doing this in. So like right now, like I said earlier, the lager tanks are coming in.
Okay.
A couple smaller fermenters and some fooders.
Okay.
And we're also getting a whole sour program going while we're doing this in our other warehouse.
Nice.
So
would that be the rehearsal studio that you're talking about, other warehouse, or the...
That's the next door spot for right now.
And okay,
eventually, the rehearsal studio is probably a little too small, and we don't have the proper plumbing to really get what we want to have cooking.
Okay.
But, we're feeling pretty comfortable with what we're doing next door. And
okay. Wait, and so how long, again, have you been at the current location with the 15 barrel?
We started brewing on it July 2017 was our first batch, right?
I think so, yeah.
When I
so couple years in, and now, Ryan, I do not envy you, man. Now you're doing 30 barrel. You're going to swap that out with a 30 barrel.
We're at the point where, our tanks are drained and filled the day of.
Wow.
You know, mine too.
Yeah. No. Just in life. Yeah.
But it's you know, good thing to have, problem to have. You know, we're bringing on a new brewer pretty quick here that's a good friend of ours.
You're firing yourself?
No, well, I mean...
You mean you're bringing on an additional brewer?
An additional brewer.
Okay.
Sorry. He's retiring.
Yes, how much he's made.
We got two other guys, badass brewers, that work with us right now.
Okay. So, look, dude, you can't enjoy your golden parachute if you don't pull that fucking cord.
You're right. I mean? I'm bringing on a new host as well. I am firing myself. can I ask you this? What are you going to do... while you swap brew houses in the same space? Like, how are you going to produce and sell beer?
That's the stress.
So one
of the phases is basically trying to get all the, obviously, the fermenters in first.
Okay.
And then we work around the clock for about 3 weeks.
To fill. Okay.
And we're thinking, whatever, you know, we have our few flagship beers. We have 4 or 5 flagships. We can contract that through a brewery that we trust.
Okay.
Several here in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And then our one-offs will just have to go on hold for a couple weeks.
Got it.
And then get that up and running, do a test batch. More than likely, you know, dump your first batch because it's trial and error and you don't want to have to put that on your consumers. And hopefully go from there.
Sure.
Keep things rolling.
Well, that makes sense. And there are a lot of great breweries in the Bay Area, so we're lucky that you have that, like, contract option.
Yes.
And I see what you mean. You're also just going to fill up that giant cold box with kegs, I assume, beforehand.
But
you're going to hope and pray that it goes smoothly while you pull out the old one and pipe in the new one.
Yes.
This sounds like your
town
version of Lagunitas sucks.
No, yeah, it's, I mean, yes. We'll do our homework when the time, when it's getting close and it's time to crunch the numbers and really get things figured out. I think we'll be okay. But
so do you have a list of features that you want to put into the new brew house? Like, you know, just pie in the sky, like, how would I do this differently if I could buy it again?
A machine to pull the poop out of my butt so I don't have to push.
That's not in the brew house.
Oh.
It's the wrong.
It's in JP's brew house.
Is that what you call it? Like, digestive system?
Yeah. I'm not wrong.
One thing
a healthy
really
one,
stoked on is right now we're just on a 2-vessel, right? We're on a mash lauter / boil kettle. So just introducing a whirlpool vessel is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're all about trying to, you know, lower your temperature for your whirlpool additions and steep that. And now with our new system, we'll be able to chill or work down to whatever temperature we desire, you know. And then also, it's going to be 4 vessels, so now we can do, you know, decoction mashes and things like that for our pilsners and all that.
Or just like triple batch in 12 hours, no problem. And
quadruple batch.
Yeah.
I mean, right now we're at the point where we fill our kettle, and it still takes us an hour and a half to hit boil. You know what I mean? Little things. Yeah. You know, so, like, double brews will, all these little things will go a lot smoother.
Are you going to stick with the gas Calandria?
No way. We're all steam all the way, baby.
Moving to steam. Okay.
So no, we already have the spot designed for the boiler, and, bringing the steam in and doing what's necessary.
Are you going to get a better way to add minerals than a cup that you'll drop in on the first batch?
I'm hoping. I mean, how are you going to know if you don't taste it with your own hands?
That's, that's the new brewer's job?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Manually drop them in.
Yeah. Hey, new guy, burn yourself.
Test your skin.
We all did it. Yeah. You got to do it
it's
now.
That's the way it goes.
Or you're not cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bad day.
Basically, you just got to hire Jamie Lannister, so he's got a metal hand.
That's right. Yeah.
Or does he? Apparently, there was a scene where... Okay.
Oh.
No spoilers.
Sorry.
Which is dumb. Like, it's... But still.
It turns out he didn't get his hand cut off.
I'm pretty sure I saw his right hand move. In the second last episode.
All right, Ryan, I got to bring you back in just for a second because I have a question for you. I'm not sure if you're one of the numbers guys at the brewery, but I'm thinking about this fast expansion, right? So a couple years ago, you know, you a new warehouse, a 15-barrel brew house, you know, a bunch of fermenters, and now a couple years later, you're going to go bigger, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's one school of thought that says, like, oh, you should just go big at the beginning so you don't have to deal with this. But obviously that's very, very expensive. And you got to take on the risk. Like, well, is it going to work? Like, are we going to sell that much beer? And then there's the route that you took. Like, well, let's just step into it. And I don't know if we have to upgrade in a couple years, we do. My question is, do you think it ended up making financial sense? Because somebody could say, like, in other words, is it going to cost you a ton more now that you're upgrading twice? Or is it kind of the same because you didn't have to fork out all that for a 30-barrel? You made it work. Now you're going to sell your 15. You're going to brew one. You see what I'm getting at here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's different for everybody. Going up from the... I mean, initially, yes. When I tell new brewers who talk to us, I say, just go as big as you can.
Okay.
Right? Because that's... We started on one. which, you know, for whatever reason,
sure,
we thought that was a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. But you were in a band, so, you know. Yeah.
No, but, you know, like, you know, 7, 10, 15, you know, get what you can, right? But if you're talking about something like a 4-vessel 30-barrel system, that's significantly different than, like, a 2-vessel 15-barrel system.
So,
like,
significantly different in terms of the cost?
Well, just significantly different in almost every single way.
Okay.
The process, it becomes so unlike the brewing we were accustomed to on the one.
I see.
That now you're talking about, like, this is production level. Like, we have so much flexibility with that system compared to even what we have now.
So it wasn't just volume you were growing into. It was really, like, expertise.
Well, it's efficiency, too. It's seeing the pain points just that we have currently with our brew house and being like, okay, what can we do to make this better for our brewers? Like, I don't think the answer is adding 10 people mm-hmm. and brewing 24 hours a day.
Okay.
I think it's, you know, it makes more sense to add more vessels, keep my brewers happy, and have them work reasonable hours. You know what I mean? Like, there's a point where it's like, what do we want to do? Do we want to just, you know, go crazy big? Or, you know, do we want to have like 100 employees? Or, like, so there's all sorts of decisions people have to make at some point.
Sure.
The direction you want to go. But so it's not really like doing it twice at this stage. But when we got the 15, yeah. Like, we should have just probably did that.
Gone to a 30 at that point.
Well, no. When we, I wish we just opened with 15.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
Right.
But the going from a 15 to a 30 in a couple years, you're not necessarily regretting that. Because not just the volume, but like you're saying, just sort of getting used to that shit.
You could run the 15 forever. There's no issue with that.
Okay.
It's just at this point, again, efficiency.
Yeah.
Making sure that the brewers don't have to work crazy hours.
Yeah.
To try and achieve what we want to achieve.
Okay.
And I think the new system kind of will allow us to do that.
That's a good answer. I was just curious about that, because we've had a lot of people in here who've done everything in between, right? Like, I started with a 30, I started with a 7, I moved to a 50. Like, we've really heard everything in between. But I just was kind of thinking about how quickly it's gone for you. But that's a good answer. Also, even just thinking about, like, how different it would have been from your 1-barrel system to a 4-vessel 30-barrel system. Like, I mean, that's
incomprehensible.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
5 years ago.
So. Right, right. Okay.
And again, like, I do think that the work-life balance of everybody who works for us is super important.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make this, you could, like, just disappear into this if you, you know, these guys are so passionate about it. But
sure.
You still have to go home. You still have to, like, you know, hang out with your family. I know it seems odd.
You do?
But yeah, you know, so.
If you like them.
It's one of those things where, you know, it's important to us that people have that.
Yeah.
And we don't want to just make everyone just slave away.
Okay.
So. Well, also, we can justify the 30 now because we do 30-barrel batches of everything, pretty much. You know, so.
You're doing it anyway. You're doing two brews a day.
For the most part. And then the ones that we do one of, you know, they're gone within 5 days, 6 days.
So got it. Got it.
We built up the point where we know we can justify a 30-barrel batch of every single recipe that we've been doing, if not more. You know, and then we have other beers that we, you know, try and crank out more of that. So at least we built into that knowing that when we do this 30 of this IPA, it's not going to sit around for 8 weeks. It's still
right.
going to be gone in 2 weeks out of the tap room and the
okay, so let me, and Ryan, you're going to fucking hate me for this. Let me ask you another question. You're all going to hate me for this. Because I know you've, I can just predict that you have lost sleep over this yourself. Are you going to feel like you should have gone with a 60? Like, and it, you know, like the decision to go with 30 as well, right?
Four vessel. No. We can do 120 in a day.
Okay, all right, good point. So you can just brew twice. Okay, all right.
This is easy too, right? Our building can only hold so much.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
I mean, with the system's restrictions for height, for width, plus all of our fermentation, so like,
it is what it is.
It is what it is, and yeah. You're going to know what that limitation is pretty fast. I mean, we knew, like, we're not going to ever get anything bigger than the 30 in this building.
Got it.
Now, if you're talking about a different building, you're like,
well, but
that's where I want to start hating you.
But almost, and maybe so, except that move, now, that's financially difficult, but almost feels easier than the move you're making, because you keep just functioning where you're at while you build the next one. And that, by the way, would be another giant leap, of course. I think you know that. Like, you'd be then brewing a 100-barrel brew house or something, but you wouldn't be swapping. You'd just be, you know, doing something else. But that obviously is down the road. So, 60-barrel fermenters... and a 30 barrel brew house is what you must be doing then, so that you can like double batch.
Yeah, we have 116. We're actually bringing in a few more and a couple 120s.
Okay, so you can now you can sort of you could do either one. You can fill some 30s if volume is not going gangbusters, or you can fill some 60s.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I was going to ask what size the new fermenters were.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you going to ever do fill the 120 with the 15 barrel? Do 8 brews?
Never. Not on this
50
one,
barrel. Yeah, no way.
Yeah. They were just talking about work-life balance. Yeah.
Not, I still don't understand what that means.
Yeah, they're going to call that beer, fuck you, I quit.
Yeah. The 120s come in after the 30 brew house comes in.
Got it.
60s up until that.
Otherwise, it would be a ghost town in there.
Oh, my God. Here we go. Here we go.
I don't know.
It's just that fermenter?
I don't know. It worked for you, so I just thought I could just say the word. It's just the thing, right?
Well, I was paying for it.
We're all not as good as me.
Yeah.
So that's the contest before the end of the show. Someone has to tell the best ghost town.
Ghost town joke, yeah.
Or joke.
It should have been our Twitter game, actually.
I should start writing, like, trying to theme them to the guests.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. That'd be pretty good.
That'd be the comedy club when JP was starring.
That's right.
I don't remember your brewery being having particularly tall ceilings. Does this 120 barrel fermenter just like fat and wide?
No, we have five spots for them. I think we mapped them out where it's right there where the beams aren't really in the way in our ceilings.
I see. Okay.
I think they're good 40 feet.
I'm not saying, yeah, it wasn't not low.
They're about 25 feet at the peak, 25? And then it kind of slopes on the sides.
Okay.
So the brew house, because we don't have to have a grist case that's on top of our brew house, because we have a kind of a secondary silo that we use as a grist case that, you know, it's like, what, 5K or something like that. So. We don't have to have a lot of height for our brew house.
Okay.
We put that on against the wall. The fermenters can go all the way up.
At the peak of the building. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Got it. All right. We got another beer in our glass, which I'm also enjoying quite a bit. I keep refilling my pale ale, too, by the way, just so folks know I'm liking this beer. Skinwalker IPA. Tell us about this beer.
All right. This was a fun one to brew. This was a collaboration with... The guy that trained me over at Black Diamond, Paul Mallory.
Okay.
We did this, his brewery's over in New Mexico. It's called Blue Corn Brewing Company. So we went out there, we brewed the original batch, and we kind of took a little more of a West Coast California malt bill to it and dryness and hop bill.
Okay.
So like out there, you know, they still kind of like to have their beers attenuate around 10-12, 10-14, you know, 3-4. And they get their IBUs up to 100 plus, and they like to throw Carum Unit and all that fun stuff into the beers. So we went out there, brewed our version of it with no crystal malt, lower mash, dried it out, dropped the IBUs a little bit, and, you know, let the kind of hop flavors.
By dried out, are you saying 10, 12 also or lower?
For us, we're like 10.08, 10 to 6,
yeah,
10.06,
okay.
Something
all right.
like that.
Yeah.
So he came out, he brewed this with us a couple weeks ago. He wrote the malt bill for us, so it was, I think, 4% Carum Unic, 2% honey, you know, little things we don't normally do in our IPAs.
Yeah.
And then Turo, so a little bit of acidulated. And then he wanted to hit 100 IBUs at boil, you know, starter boil. Like, when was the last time you brewed an IPA where you targeted 100 IBUs at starter boil?
Your bittering edition, your start of boil.
Yes.
That sounds, you know, it's ridiculous.
It scared the shit out of me.
Here's how I feel so old now. JP, we have been around for so long. Don't you think?
Yes, I do.
Like, because when we started this show, people would talk about bittering additions all the fucking time. Now we don't hear anybody even mention, like, I have to draw it out of them. I have to be like, wait, did you put anything in it when you started the boil?
Yeah, now it's understood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to hear you say it is like, wow, it sounds new, but it's not new.
No,
not at all. It's just...
Wow, but 100... Wait, though, that also then would imply that it should kind of be rip my face off bitter.
Sure, exactly. Okay. So this one...
Good beer name, by the way.
Yeah.
That's... you give Ryan props on that one. No, I think the terminal gravity was 10-14 on this one, or 10-13, I don't remember off the top of my head. But ultimately, 100 IBUs, which balances out that little bit of malt sweetness. You know what I mean? Like, just finish out at 10.08. Yeah, it would be too fucking bitter.
And then a bunch of late edition also?
We got we fucked around with a few things, just not really knowing, honestly, how to calculate it. Okay. We did 15 pounds, or we did another 30 pounds towards the end of Whirlpool. But we just did below 180 and then below 150 Fahrenheit.
Okay.
Because, you know, below 150, you don't have isomerization anymore. So we try to get a little bit more of that sweetness. And the below 180 was just kind of... You calculate about 2% utilization or something like that, you know.
Okay.
So ideally, I'd say it's about 110 IBUs if we were to take an educated guess on, on it. But
and then dry hopped later.
Dry hop later, yeah. It's Racal heavy. There's some Galaxy, a little Citra Cryo, and then some Denali hop oil in there.
Oh, hop oil too.
Yes.
As in dry hop. Okay. Interesting.
So, yeah,
I just learned that that was a thing too. I always thought it, hop oils were only like for bitterness and stuff, but
kind of our first time playing around with them as well.
Almost
essentially,
yeah, they're essentially essential.
That's
right. Yeah,
that's what means by playing around with them.
Playing around with them. Yes, yeah. So, you know, it wasn't. It was definitely a very very small percentage of the final dry hop.
Do you have to stir the batch, like recirculate in the fermenter to get the oil to mix in?
Yeah, so we diluted, you know, with a little bit of, you know, heavy alcohol, and then ultimately when we introduced our biofine, we tend to stir that in a little bit and kind of got that in there to help, you know, get into solution and all that. So
the hop oil, that was added cold then?
Yes, that was added cold, yes. All, everything else was added warm, though.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'm just looking at my notes on this beer, too, but you also use, like, cryo hops.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. The Citra was cryo. I apologize.
Citra's cryo.
Yeah. Yeah,
so explain. Can you explain cryo hops to our listeners too? Because they're a little different, also.
Yeah. Sure, man. Yeah. The cryo we're getting is ultimately it's about double the amount of alpha oil and everything. You know, so that much less leaf particle and all that.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken,
to get all like the glands and everything else without all of the vegetal matter.
Yeah, exactly. Like when you open up a box of cryo hops, I mean the whole brew house, 8,000 square foot brewery just reeks of the aromas. But
nice.
You can tell me the cryo is frozen. Is that the process for the cryo, or is that the?
What do you mean? Like how they separate it?
How they separate?
Is it they freeze it off?
I'm not
familiar with the process of making it.
I think
it was cryo liquid in the nitrogen.
I think it's closer to that. Like, yeah. And I should know this because I'm working with YCH and a bunch of this stuff too. But I think it's like a liquid nitrogen process. Okay. And I think these are not their words, but I think like even it's some of the same process that like. Marijuana companies are using to get like extracts as well. Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's way cleaner than using, you know, CO2 and all those other extracts, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Literally nitrogen, you're freezing it. You're those crystals and drop right out.
So cryo hops, because you're looking for that like dankness of the hops.
Ultimately, so like you said, you don't get the leaf matter and all that. And now they can pelletize them. So they're easy. They dissolve in your kettle very easily.
Mm-hmm.
When you dry hop with them, we typically put them in before we throw an addition of hops on top of them to help weigh them down and help them dissolve in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've had plenty of beers 100% cryo where you notice they might be lacking that little bit of that vegetable leaf matter that like IPAs truly need. But it's a nice compliment because, you can get way higher yields. The flavor, it's hard for me to describe it because this is my second beer using it, so I'm going to get more familiar with using them themselves. But I think it comes down, mainly to yield.
Yeah. Well, it's a great beer. It's a great IPA. The 100 IPU thing, IBU in the, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't have noticed it. I wouldn't have said like, oh, you went back to using bittering hops. Like
10 pounds of CTZ.
I knew it. Four stars out of five. He went back to using bittering hops.
Yeah.
I don't normally like this style, but.
Which makes me question everything we've been talking about for so long. We're like, oh, just move everything to late edition because you'll fuck it up if you put it all in the early edition, in the bittering.
Well, in hindsight, I would have taken out half of those fucking whirlpools and just put them in the dry hop.
Okay. You know,
like,
okay.
Like going
okay.
back, yeah. I think the beer is great. I love it for what it is.
So you'd have kept the 100 IBUs as a bittering addition.
For the style, yes.
You would have halved the whirlpool and then just put that in the dry hop.
Yep, 100%.
To get more aroma.
Yep.
Even with the chilling of the whirlpool addition.
Yes. I don't. I mean, then again, this beer was kegged at 11 a.m. this afternoon.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm a firm believer of keg shock. Right. It's yeah. So we need.
Yeah.
In 3 days, I might completely change my opinion.
Yeah, this beer will be different in a couple of days. Yeah, you're right.
So, like, and that's my problem. Like, you know, make it. You taste it every single day, and all you do is obsess over it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
If yeah, in my opinion, you just continuously try and find things you don't like about it that make them better, as opposed to always being happy with it, right?
Okay.
You know, and that's kind of like the mindset. So, yeah.
It's JP's life.
It might be badass,
right.
But
that's right.
Yeah. I'm always going to just think, ah, this could be better, this could be better, this could be better. You know, so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it's my mindset of this show.
I want to try this beer in 3 days, too. I think it will change. And only for the better.
Filled one keg just for tonight.
So. Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
I like it. Oh, good. Oh, wait, I have the keg. I can taste it in 3 days without going to Ghost Town.
Yes, you have.
Oh,
you
this
have,
is great.
Yeah, it's not getting released.
I was thinking, I really want to, but am I going to fucking drive to Oakland? I don't know. Okay, I'm going to come here. I'm going to text you, too, because, I believe in that, like, kind of bottle shock, keg shock thing, too.
All the way.
I think just a little change happens, and it's already a great beer.
Oh,
right. I think the level of bitterness is awesome. Like, it's just,
right?
Yeah. I mean, you kind of don't get that nearly enough lately, it seems.
Yeah. Like, and it's not
session double IPA.
Which is an IPA. Which, yeah, I don't know.
Well, and
a session triple, a session double.
Again, with our show at Russian River, like, I was kind of, Vinny was shifting my vocabulary a little bit, and I don't know. I can just listen to other people and what they say. And I've been saying for a while, like, oh, yeah, I like the flavor and the aroma, and I don't want that, like, you know, strong bitterness, right? And Vinny was, when I listened to him talk, he was like, I actually like a strong bitterness, and Blind Pig has a very firm bitterness and all of the flavor and the aroma. And as he's talking, I realize Blind Pig is one of my favorite beers on earth. So here I am parading around saying, I don't want that firm bitterness. I like
parading around. I could just see you.
On the show, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I'm just
making like pig steps. Like, I hate bitterness.
Yeah.
It was stamped on his shirt.
Right. The whole thing. But, you know, as brewers have come in over the years and they're like, oh, just do everything in the late edition. And I'm like, yeah. Because I like the flavor and the aroma,
right.
too.
Yeah.
I'm with it.
Yeah. Hello, fellow teenagers.
I have gullible's a word, but it might be one of them.
Easily swayed.
Swayed.
The court of public opinion.
Yeah. But I think we, actually, what I was really taking away from it is that we all like flavor and aroma. They don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Right.
And we've been talking so long about late edition and not having too much firm or acute bitterness.
Hell acute.
But it turns out I do like some firm bitterness.
There we go.
Like in this beer with 100 IBUs.
Yeah, it's funny because there's so many breweries out in the world, and each one of them has a distinct way that they want their beers to taste. Whether mm-hmm. And some like back to the session IPAs, you know, watery, but with a lot of bitterness. Mm-hmm. That's what they like, and there's some people that like it, and most people, I think, really, really don't. So it is an interesting time to be, into beer, whereas you're almost navigating other people's personal, like, dating profiles, right?
Right.
You're, like, on Tinder for beer, essentially. We're like, well, this, I don't know if I want to, like, really hook with this brewery, because their shit's a little too bitter, or not enough bitterness, or whatever. And you
sure.
kind of have to find that center ground, I think, with bitterness and flavor and aroma.
Yeah.
Because not everybody has those three things in the amounts that you want.
And I also feel like in all of these conversations that we've been having over the last several years, really, I felt like the spectrum was really wide in terms of how firm the bitterness is or how much it's directed toward aroma or flavor.
The spectrum of what you like?
No, just whether it's firm bitter not firm bitter or heavy on the aroma and flavor or not. And now I'm feeling like that spectrum's actually really fucking tiny because, this beer to me, I'd be like, oh, that has great flavor and aroma.
Yeah.
and a firm bitterness. And it's all like the spectrum's not as big as I think I've even made it out in my head to be. Mm. You know,
and the number doesn't necessarily mean anything. Everything. 100 IBUs taste totally different in two different beers.
In two different beers. That's true. Yeah.
It matters on what hop varieties it's coming from, your water profile, attenuation. Residual. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's so many other things. It's not just, oh, there's 100 IBU beer.
Yeah.
I'm going to like it or not.
You're right. You're right.
Oh, totally.
Which back to I don't know why I keep agreeing with fucking JP here. Which is why he doesn't want to see like hop sugars on the menu, so that we don't go down that path of like, well, IBUs means one thing. It means how bitter it is.
Like and I'm not advocating for the removal of ABV. I'm not at all. But what I'm about to say, I'm kind of couching like for me, and I think I've talked about it on the show maybe a couple of times, but mostly in private, where I like 4.5 to 5.5 maybe, right, for my alcohol.
Yeah.
And that's what I shop by. I honestly shop by ABV now because styles don't fucking mean anything, although that feel like that's coming back a little bit more. But what's the difference between a 5.5 and a 5.8? Nothing.
Yeah.
It's really nothing, right?
I mean,
besides like the actual number. But,
whether or not you buy it.
Right. Well, that's true. But that's what I mean. Like, I just have this habit of putting myself in this fucking box of like I can't get out of because I don't want too much alcohol. Is 0.3% of alcohol too much alcohol?
Right.
No. It's not really going to – and it's preventing me from enjoying
– another beer.
Right. This thing. So I have to limit myself because I don't know. I hate myself too much. But I feel like if we do, and it was, you know, obviously a joke, we're not going to put hop sugars out there. But if something like that was there, I think people are going to think that they know more than they really about it.
Yeah.
And then they're going to go, well, I mean, that's, you know, come on.
No, these this guys is don't where know I'm what agreeing.
Talking about.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, I've brought up on this show and I think the hop show, like, will we end up with a number for perceived bitterness? And listening to you talk, now I'm like, that's a fucking horrible idea. Because then it'll be like, no longer, my menu out there will say IBUs, PIBUs, and everyone will go, I'd like your highest PIBU.
Well, then we're like meta.
Who perceived it?
Right. Then it's the very much the meta where it's like, well, to whose percent? If it's perceived and you put a tangible number on it, it's not perceived anymore.
Yeah.
Then everyone just has an aneurysm.
I prefer the Crosley perspective.
Fucking wavelengths. I grade on the Phillips bell curve.
Oh my God.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Teresa, can we do a collaboration beer called Peeboo?
Peeboo.
Okay, I'm putting
it on the calendar. Peeboo,
Bryce.
Peeboo. It's all about perceived bitterness. We're not going to tell anybody what it means, but
yeah,
we're going to know. Peeboo. It's Peeboo. It's a cool name, too. They'll just be like, oh, Peeboo, it's cute beer.
I can build anything around a cool name.
I love it.
If you like R&B from the 90s, Peeboo.
Yeah. Peeboo Pale.
Peeboo Bryson.
Oh, Peeboo.
All right. We've got one more beer in our glass that I want to make sure that we taste before we got to let these guys go. What is this next beer we have here, Justin?
It's we call it the Unholy Stout. It's our Imperial Stout, 11%. This is our bear version, however you want to call it. This the majority of this went in the barrels. We left 20% aside just for taps and everything.
But, okay.
We did a blend of Templeton rye barrels and some Buffalo Trace and one other. I forget the third barrel. But
so 20% went into stainless. And then we're tasting the barrel.
We're tasting the stainless. Right
this now. Is the stainless.
No,
okay.
This was literally, we just caked this off 2 weeks ago, let it rest in the keg for, but.
Got it.
First Imperial Stout, we brewed. Golden Promise as your base malt. And then a blend of light caramel to dark caramel malts. And then some roasted barley and some Carafa dehusk.
Okay, yeah.
Basically, what blend of six malts, and that's about it. And it was a fun one to brew. We basically filled our mash down to the brim. We didn't sparge. We just drained our mash.
Oh, and then, just once or like batch?
We did it twice.
Okay, it's so like a batch sparge.
Once, and then we had to throw in a little bit of some Mutton's DME, some English DME in there.
Okay.
Just to help hit our gravity, but our target gravity is about 1125.
Wow.
So nice and big.
Wow,
Terminal came in and around 11.
It was actually to the brim of your mash tun, I'm guessing, like right there.
Yes.
Wow.
No, I mean, our mash holds about 1,500 pounds, and we put about 1,650 in there.
Okay. So, wow.
And then with the little amount of water as we can get.
Mm-hmm.
Filled our kettle to that, hit that, and then we got our DME in there with a touch of dextrose.
Okay.
Kind of took a pre-boil gravity calculator IBUs out from there, and then we did a double batch of that, and we were able to hit 11% with their, about 85% attenuation, and then the remaining went in the barrels. We're going to let that rest for at least a year, if not two.
Okay.
And then
English yeast?
001.
Cal.
Yeah, Cal.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
But
it's fucking good beer.
Oh, thanks, man.
I really like this beer.
I that Golden Promise is a base. I don't know. I mean, it's silly, but yeah, it's like little things like that. It's like not, I don't know, some little touches to it. But, no, we're all really stoked on it, and the barrel versions just smell so fucking
good. Oh, I bet.
Yeah. We're really, really stoked.
And it's all different barrels, you were saying. So you're going to blend.
I blend to three different barrels.
Okay.
So
that's going to be nice.
Yeah. So, we're going to let that kind of just age itself. If it's ready in a year, it's ready.
Yeah.
If not, we're going to give it a little more time. And then.
Will you save any of it out of the stainless? And so that you could compare what the barrel did aging to?
Probably not. We'll probably just rebrew the batch closer to it.
Got it.
And then if we need to do a little blending or anything like that, we can do it then.
I see.
Get some more cooking with it. But by then, we'll be on the larger system, and I think we can achieve a higher gravity naturally without having to add other things to it.
Okay.
1125 wasn't high enough.
No,
Beardy.
No.
Sorry. Shut up.
Yeah. Come on.
What was I thinking?
I would just be curious how this one aged too, like next to the one in the barrel.
Well, I mean,
like not to blend. Like I hear what you're saying, to blend back if you need to.
Yes,
obviously, great idea. Just in case, you never know what's going to happen in those barrels.
Right.
So that's some smart brewing on your part. But I would, I'd be curious just even how this one ages. I don't know, in a keg. I don't know what.
I'm sure we'll. I mean, this is Jason's guy to ask. We'll probably send a couple half barrels off to the cellar. Just
I'm not asking, relax, Jason. I'm virtually telling you.
No, wrong Jason.
Oh, shit.
Sorry. It's all right.
Never mind. You you don't belong to me.
Just keep coming into the tap room, and I'll tell you if we're releasing the aged version.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Just every week.
Yeah. I like that.
Not ready quite yet.
Yeah.
Just keep doing
that. This one's on tap here at the Hop Grenade 2, right?
Yes.
I know, man. This is a good beer. People should come try this.
No, it's our first big imperial stuff. We've done a couple American barley ones. We're really going to start getting the barrel program going real quick here. Now we have the new location for it.
But okay.
This is our first beer of this ABV with this kind of residual sweetness to it. And we're pretty happy with it and excited to see how it turns out.
Yeah, I guess the thing I'm liking about the residual sweetness, which I normally don't like, is just a pretty strong amount of roast, too, that is making that residual sweetness palatable to me. It's not acrid. It's not chalky. It's definitely sweet. But normally, if it was just sweet, I'd be like, okay, well, that's good. Let's move on. But I think it's got a good amount of roast to it that is making it makes me like it more.
It's balancing to where it's almost just feels more silky. Thick. It's not one way or the other.
Yeah.
Like you were saying.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not cloying. Yeah. There's and something that I've had happen with my stouts on occasion and I've gotten better with. So I'm actually super impressed you guys hit it out of the park on this first one. But it's like if it's got too much bitterness, it has to age out for a while before it's really nice.
This is
already nice. So it's pretty cool.
It is really nice. I agree with you. I would like to see this in 2 months.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. For me, there's the alcohol is there, but all that softness, there's that kind of marshmallow softness. There's the roasty part that's in it too. But right now it's 60% just gelling really nicely.
Yeah.
I would love
just a couple months.
Just a little bit just for me. I mean, I don't know. But,
well, and with that, I think Teresa brings up a good point. So two months might be a sweet spot.
Yeah, maybe.
But a year, maybe too much of the bitterness drops out. And now I start complaining that it's too sweet at the end.
So be careful.
You know,
Don't let you. That's what you're. Watch out. Watch the fuck out.
Well, don't worry. I'll only complain to you.
Summarize the extract.
Yeah, dose him. But that's the thing. Like the things that drop out of beer, it's not very linear. Like whether it's hops that drops out or the sweetness starts to turn more into something else, sherry or whatever.
Right? I mean, you can plan for some of that shit, but but you're right. For the most part, it's like. Like with a beer like this, you know, if you go too long, you could lose some of those subtleties that make it really good. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, I like this beer.
Yeah, you got to mind your pee boo.
That's right. Mind your pees and boos.
That's right.
Can you guys taste the maple donuts and bear claws that we threw into it?
Did you really?
No.
Because I was like,
this is a pastry stout.
There is a little pastry to it. There is a little caramel to it. There is a little.
You are easily sweet. We've already figured this out.
Say two things. I'm like, that.
Your brain has been hacked.
And I love it.
It's so good.
Yeah, really.
Pour it directly into my urethra, please.
That's the next big thing.
Well, awesome beers, gentlemen. Thank you for coming in here.
Thanks for having us. This is awesome.
You guys are doing good work over there. I'm glad to see you growing and growing fast. Good luck with that. You know, I'll have to have you back after, not during for sure, but maybe after the 30 barrel goes in. I'd be curious how fucking disastrous that was for you guys, or smooth. I'm wishing for smooth.
Wonderful stories for you.
Yeah, right. maybe I'll come down with a camera and just kind of catch you guys on a day. But Justin, I'm proud of you. I've seen you around here for a while. You're making good beer at Black Diamond. I'm proud to see you making wonderful beer with Ghost Town. It's fun to have you on the show.
Thanks, man. Means a lot, dude. Stoked to be here, dude. This is fucking great.
Awesome.
Yeah. If beer's this good, it won't be a ghost town for long.
Winner! Oh, he got it. I don't know. People are on Beardy's side tonight.
No, it's not good. Because it's the implication is it's a ghost town.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I see. Right? That's JP's right. From a marketing perspective, that one's bad.
How many JPs right is that? That's like at least 25.
But does it matter because everyone else liked it?
It's your show, man.
Does it matter? I don't know.
The customer's always right. Everybody liked it better than yours.
Fuck the customer.
that 60% of us are cheese balls. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I'm not even a dad. You should be better at dad jokes.
I should be better at a lot of things, dad related.
I've been saying that for years.
It's true. You're not wrong. For years, you've been right.
All right.
My other kids don't know, so it's fine.
Mm. I'm not kicking you guys out. I got to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're just going to have a little more fun, but you're welcome to stay and drink beer with us if you want to do that, or you can go out in the tap room and drink beer. You know, it's up to you guys. A lot of people feel like, fuck this. I've been in here long enough.
Yeah.
Next to Beardy's awful jokes.
they group in the corner and make everybody uncomfortable.
It's true.
But what I'm going to do is take a really quick break, actually. So we're just going to take a couple of minutes so we can regroup. We'll come back. We'll get some more done and have some fun. But I just want to thank you guys again for being here. You can go to ghosttownbrewing.com, ghosttownbrewing.com. We're probably finding y'all on Facebook as well, Twitter,
everything.
Instagram, all the things. Foursquare, is that a fucking thing, JP, anymore?
Snapchat?
I think it's sort of coming back, but not really.
Yeah, is it really?
Yeah, I thought it was.
You've been trying to bring it back?
I've been trying to bring it back.
You're like, hey, everybody, I'm over here on Foursquare. Right. I'm just waiting for you to come.
Just like in middle school, no one wants to play Foursquare.
Nobody.
So.
Yeah, all right, hang in there. It's the session. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Tyler from Libertine Brewing Company in the Central Coast of California. You're listening to Brewing Network, The Session.
It sucks.
Does it suck?
It sucks.
But that's what's good about it, is that it sucks, right?
All right, thanks so much for hanging out with us.
You're welcome.
I also want to thank my friend Sully from the 21st Amendment for being a sponsor for so long. He's going to come do some co-hosting with us, too, I think. But they brought back toaster pastry. Did you know that?
I did, and I'm disappointed that I went to the store that didn't couldn't find it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Ah, keeping up with demand. That's a 7.6% ABV, 74 IBU beer.
And it's one of the beers that I break my, like, 5.5 rule for, because it tastes very good.
Yeah, it's their India Red Ale. And I don't know. It's a good beer. I like that. And I felt like they changed it just a little bit this time for the better with a firm bitterness matter of fact.
There you go. You're embracing your firm bitterness stance now. I'm hardlining it on firm bitterness.
Yeah. It's the first beer that they brewed out of their San Leandro brewery back in 2015. I don't know if you know, but that was like the plants, like the old Kellogg's.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, oh, well, what if, you know, Kellogg's made all those like old breakfast foods like Eggos and
Pop-Tarts,
Frosted Flakes, Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, yeah.
So they were like, oh, let's check this out. So they made Toaster Pastry, which is a bit of an homage to their predecessors. So it's available in stores now. It's a limited release. So if you see it, as JP now knows, grab it and then get ready for their next one, which is Hop Crisis in June.
Nice.
Nice.
Man, I went to the grocery store, like I said, and I was really there. I wasn't lying. And I saw they had a six-pack of El Sully.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic beer.
I love that beer.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Easy, no choice. Easy choice, no brainer.
I
just
agree.
Pick it, put it. So I go and I'm putting it in the fridge, and I, you know, tear the paper, like, six-pack. And I pull out this can, and it doesn't fucking stop. The can keeps going. It was a 4-pack of the stovepipe, 19-ounce, 19.8-ounce cans.
Of El Sully.
Of El Sully. And I'm like,
I'm all about that.
What the fuck is, so I text Sully. I'm like, hey, you know, I didn't know, because when you look at the packaging, it's slightly smaller.
Okay.
And then in the top, like, eighth, it says, like, 19-ounce cans. I didn't see it. I just saw the name, El Sully, and I'm like, I'm gonna grab this.
It.
Let's go.
Were the cans, like, horizontal in the package, or?
They were, yes. I think so.
Oh.
No. It was stand upright, but I think on the shelf space, it was,
it just,
you know,
didn't look all that.
It didn't stand out to me. So,
and your,
like,
eyes were playing tricks on you, because the labeling was the same.
The labeling's pretty much the same, although it's slightly different, but, you know, I'm scanning the shelf because know Safeway doesn't have a whole lot of good beer, so I know when the good beer is there, and I just, brand recognition, pop that thing. And so I'm like, I didn't even notice. He goes, yeah, they're mainly for, like, music venues and stuff. And I go, okay, that's fine.
Right.
Well, fuck it. And I opened that thing, because I thought it would be like, well, by the time I finish, it's going to be too warm.
It's the perfect size.
It was so good, and it was still cold, and I'm like, this is my new format.
Yeah.
I really and then, but I had,
of that beer.
Of that beer, right. Yeah. But I had three of them, and I don't drink that much beer normally. And then I'm like, this is too. It's an easier way to drink more beer,
right?
And I really appreciated it just on some level,
which is why I buy 2 4-packs at a time.
Right.
Because my house is a bit like a music venue.
Yeah.
Every night.
That's true.
To myself.
Right.
So yeah,
I saw those sold as singles at my grocery store.
I've only
for about $2.50 or something.
I've only ever seen them sold as singles. I've never seen the 4-pack.
So yeah. I guess I don't go to the grocery store often enough. That's what I'm learning right now.
Well, I meant,
do
just
you go
the
to now? Here's a fair question.
Do you have
a liquor store that you go to, because there's like a better beer selection, or you just don't go buy beer that often?
You know, I live in a small town.
Yeah,
I'm a little poor, so I usually don't go to buy beer.
Like, you bring beer home from the brewery.
I have a lot of my own beer. I rely on beer that people bring me.
I would
live off the land.
I would do the same.
So yeah.
By the way,
kind of like that.
So we all try to share in the bounty here, too. Like, oh, you take this one home, you take this one, for the same reason. Like, we don't want to go spend a bunch of money on beer either.
I just look. I'm window shopping.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't afford that stuff on the beer aisle.
Yeah. Every now and then, there is a liquor store here where the guys will recognize me, and they're fans of our beer festival that we do, and they'll give me a little discount, and I'm like, oh, sweet. Like, I can tell the ones that recognize me. I'm like, okay, good. I'm going to stock up. I'm going to buy, like, 15 of these 6-packs today, because I'm going to get my discount or whatever. But I try not to spend a lot on beer also. But the reason I ask is because there is a difference between the grocery store and a good liquor store, right? Like, let's be real.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I'm just stating the obvious, but like certain grocery stores can kind of, you know, look, I always want a Drake's, you know that. So I can hit the Safeway almost anywhere in the Bay Area for a Drake's, and so I'm good with that. I can always get a 2-1-A of some kind. Maybe maybe not the toaster pastry, maybe not always the kind of seasonals like that.
Mm-hmm. Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If I'm going grocery shopping anyway, I'll hit the beer aisle and find something that I like. But if I'm just going for beer, I tend to just go to the liquor store that I know will have a few things.
There are a couple grocery stores that actually sell food that have killer beer selection in Berkeley.
Oh, yeah.
Just like a couple aisles of their grocery store are beer.
Right.
And it's even refrigerated, too.
Yeah.
Too.
And, you know, I haven't been to a Whole Foods in a while, but they were good at that for a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know about they since Amazon.
I was there a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And, yeah, I got some good beers there. And it's stuff you can't really, at least I can't really find. Way out in the sticks where I live, it's Safeway. I mean, we have a BevMo, but it's if you look at that, I'm also trying to be a firm believer on date codes now that more breweries are using them.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to pay, you know, $9 a six pack for 8 month old IPA or 8 month old pale ale or whatever. So
on a warm shelf,
right? So I just go to Safeway and it's, you know, basically like I said, three or four brands, and that's kind of it because that's all we get. So,
but
I'm fine with that.
Even in the Safeway here, three to four brands that I would even look at.
Right, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
And I'm gonna say though, what I kind of like about the Safeway model, if you can find those three or four brands that you like, they're moving through some beer.
They move through some beer,
so
absolutely. Yeah.
I'm not really having a problem with fresh beer from Safeway.
Right. That's,
and Colt.
Right. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's why I'm getting it there, because it's fresh.
Yeah.
And it is limited, but what's limited to does move.
And in fact, sometimes at the liquor store, if it's like, oh, I've heard of that brewery or I want to try that brewery, I am having a freshness problem because maybe that shit, like, they're just not moving the volume. So instead of having four brands that they know they can move, like a Safeway, a good liquor store is obviously trying to have some selection.
Yeah.
And yeah, occasionally, in fact, I didn't even notice it with one of them. I bought a six pack of cans and I thought it was all right. And I brought it golfing with a couple of the guys here from the Hop Grenade.
Yeah.
And Jason wanted to trade me. He's like, oh, I'll give you one of mine that I brought you. And he drank it. He was like, oh, thanks for the old blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh,
got him.
I was like, oh, really? Yeah. It's old. And it comes from a liquor store that him and I both like.
Yeah.
And I just was like, oh, yeah, I guess that is a problem sometimes when you're trying to carry selection.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're gonna end up with old shit. That's not the liquor store's fault.
No,
frankly, it's the brewery's fault. And not that they have the resources to go around and like pull old beer and put up old beer. Like, I get that. I understand that. But you know,
I mean, the same thing happens with bars with too many taps.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they'll tap, and the keg will be sitting there ready to go. It's not the brewery's fault that a bar tapped a keg and couldn't move it in 6 months because they have 40 other beers.
But I think if the brewery never checks up, then it kind of...
Yeah.
It's not a good representation.
Or the distributor or whatever.
And that's kind of what I mean. So you're right. Okay, so like my tap house doesn't have that problem because, A, we don't have that many taps.
Right.
We're not a yard house or some bullshit like that.
Right.
So I can see your point there. But it kind of brings me back to, and I said this on the air before, where Jamil told me years ago, where he said, everything that's wrong with your company is your fault. And I was really offended.
It's a very Jamil thing to say.
It is. Yeah. I was really offended when he first said it
to me.
That's
why he's depressed.
I was like, well, come on, wait. But he was right.
Yeah.
And what he meant to say was kind of what Teresa's saying. Well, like, did you check up on that beer? Like, did you go back and see? Did you? And even if you don't have the resources, like, there are excuses. There are excuses. But it doesn't make it less your fault.
Right.
So, like, I can say there are plenty of things wrong with the brewing network that I can certainly give a reason for why that's wrong. It doesn't make it less my fault, you know. So that I think that's kind of what I mean about that.
Yeah.
But, like, okay,
they don't have the resources.
I know, and I said that.
And even if it's an account that's not moving the beer fast enough, many brewers aren't going to waste their few salespeople's time going back and checking on the slow moving accounts.
You're right; it's still their fault.
Just turn and burn.
You're absolutely right. Those are the reasons, and it's still the brewery's fault
for not having enough money to be able to employ.
But
don't pass the buck.
You're still, it's still your name on the line. Like, we are self distributed. We totally go through this. We go back to our accounts and we see that this beer got more, like, our benchmark is we want IPAs to be there no more than 3 months.
Mm.
Well, if that's gone over 3 months, we buy that beer back.
So there you go.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's how that's how the brewery makes it better. Like, I've seen many situations where if there's a beer that's old out at a bar, someone will make a comment on social media or even email a brewery directly.
Yeah.
And if the brewery doesn't actually then go through the effort to go fix that situation, buy the beer back or whatever, I think if the brewery does that, that's the best the brewery can do.
I disagree. I think
for a craft, well, for a small craft brewery.
Again, here's what I think. There are problems with the brewing network that I don't have the resources or ability to fix. They're still my fault. It's my fault that I haven't figured out how to either have a better system, how to have more resources, how to fix that. So, in other words, you're...
Maybe it's your responsibility. Maybe it's not your fault. I think those two things could be mutually exclusive. Like, it's your responsibility to grow the brewery network, but if you can't think of the thing, that's not your fault for not knowing how to think of the thing. Right?
It is. I didn't go learn it. I didn't do better.
But if you don't know that it's out there and you're researching and you're learning as much as you can, but you don't hit on this one thing,
yeah,
it's your responsibility, but it's not your fault.
Well,
as, you know what I mean?
Let me say something in between.
Yeah.
And that is, I'm also acknowledging that I'm not perfect and I can't know everything and I can't do all the things, but I'm just not skirting that it's not my fault. You see what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I ended up liking the premise that Jamil was saying.
Yeah.
Because if I were able to have more time, if I was a little smarter, if I was a little, like, all of these things... I'm the one, the only one who could fix them, which makes it sort of, I'm then also the one whose fault it is. So I don't even mean it as a negative in some ways.
No, I know, but I think fault and responsibility are different.
Yeah,
and I think what you're describing is it's your responsibility as the owner of the company and the visionary and the driver of this whole thing that is here, the Brewing Network, right?
Right.
It's responsibility, but if something goes wrong, it's not your fault for not thinking about it. I think that's too much guilt, and maybe that's my lack, my trying to shed all of my guilt, and maybe it's Jamil's like taking on all of his guilt,
which he does. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that there's
a fine line between the fault and the responsibility. Yes. But like,
because whose fault would it be if the power went out right now? Even, like, you could have called PG&E and known that the power was going to go out.
Yeah, he could have had more backup.
Is that really on your?
I could have had
actually,
backup
a good point.
Generators.
You should have backup generators. Yeah. Let's go.
Well, but maybe a more realistic question would be, if the power goes out, do I have a backup plan to take care of every customer in there to pay their bill, get their beer, and so that would be like my fault. So no, it's not my fault the power went out, but it would be my fault if my customers had a horrible experience because of it.
And so that's what I'm saying.
Because I didn't plan for it.
The brewery makes an effort to fix the out of date beer.
Yes,
that's the same thing. Is it the brewery's fault that the beer went out of date at the same
time? Yeah, no, because they. I mean, they.
It's how they respond.
If
to the
they
problem.
Made
yeah,
an
it's
effort,
how they, it's
yes,
how they respond to the problem.
Yeah.
I agree. You can't make people buy the beer. Like, hopefully, they will buy the beer. But if they don't, do you have a plan?
You have, which is so. Maybe I misunderstood you because I felt like Teresa was saying we go and check it out and buy it back.
Yeah,
that's taking responsibility, and now it's So,
but it's not Teresa's fault that it took 8 months for that one account to go through that.
Oh, it would be no, but it would be her fault if a consumer ended up with an 8-month-old beer because she didn't take the necessary measures to make sure they didn't end up with an 8-month-old beer. And even if you're not capable and you guys don't have the resources and whatever, I'm just saying it's still your responsibility ultimately.
Well, and you know, we make such a limited amount of beer that if we're putting our beer in a place that's sitting around that long, like, we're not doing the right thing with our beer.
There's all these ways. Look, it's not black and white, but I ended up whereas I don't even know how we got started on this, but where I was offended by his statement at first, in the end I was like, he's right.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, you could say, well, it was the business's choice to sell it to that person to begin with.
Yeah.
And that's where they went wrong.
Yeah, I mean, as a liquor store, if you have, like, aging product, you just throw, like, 25% off tag, you know? I don't know.
Well, that's what happens at the retailers, too, which, by the way, I buy all the time because sometimes I don't give a fuck what I'm drinking. It's an alcohol delivery system.
I'm actually shocked you don't like just cold vodka. Like, you're not at that point.
I know.
You know what I mean?
So I'm very deliberate about that, actually. Yeah. Like, we've talked about this over the years where, like, Doc would try to get me to start enjoying whiskey and stuff like that, you know? And I'm like, listen, I know me. I don't need another thing like this. I don't need another vice. I also don't like being like fall down shithouse drunk. To me, alcohol delivery system is like, just give me a little buzz and I'm ready to go to bed. It's fine. Yeah. So yeah, I'm like not looking for that fucking alcohol. I don't want to. I do not want to get into whiskey. I do not want to get into cocktails. No, I mean.
Just ice cold vodka. Just a shot every hour or whatever.
But that's save like a ton of money.
So. Then it's probably fair to say that I exaggerate a little bit about how much I just like alcohol.
So is it fair or is it not? Now I don't know what to say.
Well, because the truth is, I do love alcohol. I do love catching a buzz. But I actually just really, really enjoy beer.
Yeah.
So I don't need another like alcohol.
That's why I'm like,
but I will drink kind of like mediocre beer and still be like, well, it's still beer.
Dude, Taryn bought a bunch of beer for her sister's bachelorette party. And, you know, they went off in the coast or whatever, and she forgot the beer. It was a 24 pack of Pacifico.
Okay.
I'm like, well,
done.
Let's throw it in the fridge. And I'm unloading all of it in the fridge. And, you know, we have a fridge in the garage for like, you know, fermenting and whatever. And I'm like unloading the six pack or this 24 pack. I'm like, well, I don't have to go out in the fridge to get more beer to bring it back in. So I'm just pushing all of it in the fridge. And Taryn's like, are we really going to drink all that beer? And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's fucking paid for.
Yeah.
It's not going to sit, because if it's out there, out of sight, out of mind, Pacifico is not that
great. Throw it away.
Right. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's almost gone now.
Yeah.
Well, you just wait until it's there. A hot day and you got some limes.
Seriously.
Oh, dude, yesterday was, it was cold and raining yesterday and I had like four of them. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's a good, I mean, it's a fine beer. It's not a great beer, but yes, it is. I didn't really care. It's like, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah, there are times when I do care. Like I think I mentioned that one of my favorite breweries I picked up at Trader Joe's. I was mentioned on the show a few weeks ago or whatever. And I was like, oh, okay. That one I had to throw out. I threw away the whole six pack. Like, it just was not.
I want to do that with that new Newcastle. I had that. Did I tell you about that?
No.
New Newcastle?
Yeah, but I ran into Dick Beardy at the Safeway the other day.
Yeah, I did the right the first time.
And he was looking for that because he said you had tried it.
I should have brought it.
Did you? So when you say new, I think, what did we mention? That it's made now by Lagunitas.
It's made by Lagunitas, and it's a new recipe.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's a different recipe.
What, how do we know that? Was that advertised?
Yeah.
They were like, oh, all new Newcastle.
Yeah, yeah. It's a brand. It's specific for the U.S. market.
Okay.
It's a brand new recipe.
And?
I don't like it. I hate it, as a matter of fact. And
but
struggle.
You like the old Newcastle?
I love Newcastle. Okay. Yeah, Newcastle's great. I would try to shop it in 24 or 12 packs where it was all like in the cardboard box so it didn't have any light struck, because that's the problem with Newcastle. It's all light struck. Or the rare time I found it in cans, which I don't think they do anymore. That was the best. Newcastle in cans, phenomenal beer.
Yeah. We can't get that anymore?
I've only seen it maybe two or three times, and even then that was 15 years ago. So I haven't seen it since. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But no, it's very one-dimensional. It's the new one is very one-dimensional, kind of tastes like blood, a little metallic-y, and just
iron.
Like crystal malt water. It was not good.
Okay.
It was not. I would rather have a skunky Newcastle
than
the new one. And I have three left in my fridge. I don't even want to drink them.
What was? Did you end up getting it that night?
I did get it.
Yeah.
To me, it tastes like they swapped out the English base malt for American Two Row.
Okay.
And used Cal Ale.
Oh, yeah.
And that's pretty much all they changed.
Which would be cheaper, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
Both of those things.
In Petaluma,
yeah.
And so they have, it's their house yeast, and they just use their silo malt. Mm. But
it is just like way dried out and not English malt.
Exactly.
It's very dry.
No yeast character, just very dry.
But a lot of crystal malt.
It's just an American brown ale now.
It's not even, I don't know, like, man. I think it's less than that. There's not, American brown ales had some character malts to them, but it tastes just like crystal malt and blood. And it was not, I don't know, man. Mm. It was very, like I said, for me, one dimensional. And that dimension was crystal malt with a hint of blood.
I didn't get the metallic blood character. It just tasted like a low ABV brown ale.
I see.
It's boring.
Okay.
I wonder if Jeremy will talk to us about it.
Yeah.
There.
I didn't realize it was a new recipe.
Yeah.
I thought they were trying to actually.
That's what I thought too, because I was kind of like, what's the point? Like, why not brew a favorite fresh and close to home?
Well, right, and I wonder if maybe they couldn't. maybe they couldn't hit it, so they're like, well, we'll just do something else entirely. Huh. But I went back to the same Safeway that I bought my beer at. It was a week later because, look, when you have a kid, you're going to the fucking store all the time.
Oh, dear.
They had a full shelf of the new Newcastle, right, the Heineken Newcastle. Mm-hmm. And next to it was the old place for the Newcastle, like the actual English version. It was all gone.
The old version.
Yeah, the old version's all gone, and the Newcastle, the new version is still there. So, huh. And in my mind, I'm correlating the two, right? And going, well, people must really love the old one, and they hate the new one, but,
Or they stocked differently.
Right. But
maybe you're right, because it's not like craft beer drinkers are really going to grab the old Newcastle.
Yeah.
I feel like it's the old... Maybe they're old or not. They're old. Let's be honest. Yep. But it's the old guys who
it's
like
me. I'm the one going for it.
Like, oh, I want my old Newcastle. Just grab it. They look up and they're like, wait, new Nick. I'll just take the old Newcastle.
But I will. And I wonder how much of it is actually maybe even marketing for Newcastle. Maybe that's too conspiracy theory. But it made me want to go back to purchase the old version of Newcastle.
Yeah.
And I hadn't thought about that beer in years.
Right.
And now I really want to drink. And I was actually a little disappointed that I couldn't, pay $16. For a pack of beer.
You know what I should have done, being the asshole I am, especially since I did it to you, after seeing it the Safeway, I should have bought both and made this fucker blind taste test them.
Oh, man, there'd be no way.
And pick your favorite.
Hell, man.
Our Safeway didn't have both. It just had six and a 12-pack.
Okay.
Containers. Yeah. I looked.
I should bring my. I still have a bottle. I will bring my bottle, and I should have brought it a couple times since I've
of
seen
the
it,
new
of the new one. Because,
it's so funny the name.
I still have some.
The Nuki. The new Newcastle.
Oh, you haven't finished either. Yeah, I'm drinking Pacifico, and I have this stuff. In the
I would rather drink the Newcastle than Pacifico.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Like I'm gonna go back.
The new Newcastle.
Yes, I would.
I think you should.
The new Newcastle than Pacifico.
Old
now,
Castle.
Now it's making me nostalgic for Newcastle.
Newcastle's good.
We had a Northern English Brown Ale, but it had such a lame name. I had to rename it.
What was it called?
It was called Tiddlywink.
That's lame. I'm sorry, Teresa.
Why no dudes, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll have a...
Excuse me. Could I have the Tiddlywink?
Yeah.
I'd like a Tiddlywink.
Yeah.
Say it under the breath, like
Tiddlywink.
Yeah. Number four.
Yeah, you guys fucked that up, Teresa.
That was when I didn't name all the beers. Okay. I cannot take credit for that one.
Yeah.
I just didn't.
Everything that happens
is your fault.
Man, it's my fault that Tiddlywink hasn't come back. Let's put it that way.
What would you name it the next time? Have you thought about that?
I'll have that next time I see you.
Brown Town.
I have a whole process. I can't just like.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't just like boom.
Think of it up, yeah.
I feel like we should name all Crooked Lane beers on the air nowadays.
Yeah.
Just on the air. Is every time we're gonna hash it out.
We're gonna come with five ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we got Peeboo.
Twitter game every week. We got Peeboo. Yeah. Listeners, you can't steal that.
That's
I'm
true.
Trademarking it right now. On Teresa's behalf.
The full weight of John at the Beer Law Center will come down in your head.
Yeah.
Somebody's out there going, hey, we already have Peeboo.
Yeah, that's probably is out there. Everything's out there.
Yeah, Newcastle.
Fucking everything is out there.
Now I'm thirsty for Newcastle.
Yeah. All right. Well, what was our Twitter game today, JP?
If you could, I don't know, what was it again? If you could give a strong, caring hug to anyone in history,
who
would it be and why?
All right. Before we get to the listener answers, let's go around the room.
Oh, boy. Oh God. I don't know.
And figure out who... And just I'll waffle for a minute so y'all can think. Bebo, you're included here too. In all of history,
man. Why not?
I can already predict Bebo's. I know who Bebo's is.
Right. Travis Tritt,
Brad Paisley,
but specifically his dick. Want to hug his wiener?
Just to give is
with both arms,
with all five fingers.
Now, obviously, the Twitter game's already out there, so it's just more for our sake. Are we hugging the person for their sake or for our sake?
Oh,
like, do we want the hug or
the intent? I think was for our sake.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So who do we want to hug from?
And who do we need a hug from?
From anybody.
I mean, the implication is there is reciprocation. They will hug back. That was actually going to be like a finer point I was going to put on the game. Like, no, that's
their arms just aren't at their sides staring at you awkwardly.
But that could be, I don't know.
I have mine.
I have mine too, but it's not for horny purposes, so it might not be as good. Who wants to go first?
Well, I assumed it wasn't for horny purposes, because you said more of a heartfelt.
A strong, caring hug.
Yeah.
Look, you can be horny and caring.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll go first, give you guys time to think about it. But
I got mine. I got mine. I got a backup. I don't know.
in case I say
well,
that.
I mean, you know.
I would like to be hugged by James Earl Jones.
You want to hug James Earl Jones?
I want a hug from James Earl Jones. He's such a. I also feel like during the hug, he would say something nice in the deep voice.
What would he say to you?
Like, you are a valued person.
I am your father.
Yeah,
Justin, I am not your father, but right. If I could be, I would. Be.
I don't know. It just sounds. He seems like a very comforting fellow.
And soft. He's like a cushiony man.
Yeah. I just picture him when he gets all happy in Field of Dreams. Like once he he buys into the thing, he's got that laugh. I would like a hug from James Earl Jones.
Not a bad choice.
That's my pick. All right, JP. So what's yours?
Well, now I have three.
You got to pick a number one.
I think a number one would be Steve Martin.
Oh, yeah. I know you're Steve a big Martin. Steve Martin.
I am such an emotional erection when it comes to Steve Martin. Man, I love him so much.
That'd be a good hug.
And I think so too, right? Powerful, caring, because he's a very caring, emotional, empathetic man.
Would he, because he's a comedian, would he slap you on the back while he hugs you, or just, yeah?
I think if you get to the level of you're hugging somebody like Steve Martin, I feel like it's very, you're accepted into, the, like, because the slap on the back is very much like, all right, you get three pats and then you're done, right? Like, and that's really the accepted number of slaps, right? It's three. We can agree on that. It's like
anything more than that.
Like how many chuggas
offensive.
Before a choo-choo, right?
Yeah.
Standard. Yeah. There's three.
Yeah.
It's just a slap on the back.
That's a limit, yeah.
Right. But I think Steve Martin, when he hugs, he wants you to feel him.
Right.
Right. And his you connect the hearts together.
I agree.
Would there be a banjo in between you?
No. He would, if he had it, he would take it off.
He would move it. He would even, he at least slide it behind.
Oh, no. I think he would physically remove it.
Right.
Because my arms will go around his. He's a very thoughtful hugger.
By the way, just back to the slaps real quick. Yeah. You're right about the three max, but there is a caring, there's a number value. One is they care more. Two,
you think
they
so?
Care. Three slaps is the least caring of
really?
The slap hugs, whereas one is just you get there.
You
almost,
get that one.
And that's almost
you hear
like
that
a,
resonance in your friend's body cavity.
The one just kind of brings it in, but the three is like, okay, this is over.
Yeah.
Or just the
you're tapping out.
Emotional resonance. I think that's a good, you get that slap and you go boom and you feel that.
Yeah.
Is it me? I think it's me.
Yeah. Is it your headphones, too?
One channel dropped out.
Yeah, my headphones going in and out, but...
I got to cut this out because it's not happening on air. It's just happening on our headphones.
All right. That would be my number one.
Okay.
You know, but I have a hard time picking number one anything, so I always have multiple.
That's fine. As you were talking, I thought of a number two, so
who's
I had to say
two?
Bill Murray.
Oh, Bill Murray would be good.
Yeah, and it was you saying Steve Martin that made me think of Bill Murray. And me thinking of the slap, because Bill Murray would never slap. He would just...
It's funnier.
Yeah.
But I don't think he would mean it as much as Steve Martin would. My second would be Sophie Turner, because she's my girlfriend.
I don't know who that is.
Sansa.
Okay.
I love her so much. Yeah. And then my third, just for shits and giggles, John Goodman.
Okay.
I'm a big John Goodman fan recently.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been a John Goodman fan for a while. He's a good guy. Bevo.
I was a fan, but one day before
Can I guess your historical person?
Paul
it
the
has
Apostle.
To be historical?
Well,
I thought it was any person in history.
Sure. So it is any person in history.
What's the difference?
And now, based on your answer, I don't have it right.
No, go ahead. I want to hear you. I have two.
Jesus.
I knew you were going to guess Jesus.
Me I'm wrong.
I'd love to get a hug from Jesus, for sure.
See?
But that wasn't number one because I just didn't think that that's where we were going with this.
Okay.
Jesus or real Jesus?
Real Jesus.
Oh, okay.
What you got?
I only have two. One of them is my mom because I'm emo. And then number two is...
Your
mom.
Number one's your mom.
Totally my mom.
Okay. I forgot about my mom now, too.
Too soon.
Actually, I want to get a hug from Justin's mom.
Bunch of dead moms. Yeah.
But my number two is totally The Rock.
Now The Rock, slapper. He would slap her back. Oh, well, I mean, not her back, but...
I love the opposing moral sides of Bebo. Where it's clearly
Jesus,
like, obviously
and
Jesus, and then on the other hand, the sexy-ass Rock. You know? All right, good ones. Teresa?
Okay, well, since I'm a big fan of the jerk, I think I am going to choose Bernadette Peters because, you know, he got me on Steve Martin, and my brain immediately went to Bernadette Peters, and she's like this little pint-sized lady with a voluminous bosom. I could just pick her up
carry
her around.
Yeah. Okay, I understand. Yeah, I understand this one. Yeah? All right. Did you have a second just for fun?
I don't.
You had a number one.
I'm just sticking.
I like it. Yeah. All right. I like it.
I was thinking before the whole, like, it got on dead comedians.
you had a different, yeah.
I had another dead comedian. I feel like John Candy would give a good hug.
Oh, yep.
Who doesn't want a hug from Uncle Buck?
I feel like
he'd have something smart and funny to say in your ear too.
Like getting a hug from Chris Farley, where I feel like those people couldn't help
make a joke out of it.
Right?
Yeah, they'd be grabbing your butt.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't get a caring hug. Yeah.
I've heard some
unless they were coming down
stories that John Candy did have a soft side.
I see
his.
Oh, for sure. But I mean, like, so did Chris Farley. But yeah. I feel like hugging, I don't know. But look,
I thought we were.
It's your hug. Who are we to?
Yeah, this is a safe space. Warren can play out his.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
It's not like we're meeting a fan.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But okay,
it's caring. Well, you're giving him a caring hug.
Who was it before we started talking about comedians? You sound like it sounds like you had another one before that.
Oh, Dolly Parton.
That's a good one. Maybe that's my number two. Yeah. Fuck Bill Murray. Wow.
You know, this is a good premise for a new sitcom. Like, we have comedians riding cars, comedians having cigarettes and coffee. Now we have comedians giving hugs.
Hugs. Comedians hugging people. That'd be good.
Yeah. Easy to produce.
Yeah.
I think I can even handle this.
It's true.
All right. Well, what did the Twitter sphere say?
We had, oddly enough, maybe it's not oddly enough, we had someone say Jesus in a non-ironic fashion.
Yeah.
But I didn't put that on the list because I feel like that was too on point. Patty's House, Ale and Lagers, says, I would hug Michael Jackson because, well, not that one. So I imagine he means...
So the writer?
Yeah. I don't know, man. No.
Yeah, or which one. Yeah. But
who knows?
I want to go down this road, but we should.
Nope. WM Daily says, Napoleon Bonaparte. The guy seems like he could have used a hug.
Okay. So that's the... Yeah, that's the opposite. Like, who's getting the hug?
He gives low hugs all the time.
That's true. Matt... Someone, I don't know, is that his name? He says, if give Doc one after... Oh, sorry, misspell. Now I feel like I'm reading feedback. I'd give Doc one after he fell off the BN stripper pole, picking the little guy up and taking that weight off his busted ankle.
Yeah, he needed it, that's for sure. Yeah.
Tyler says, Louis Pasteur. Without him, we wouldn't know what we do about yeast and brewing. The exhumation might be a little weird, but it's only awkward if you let it be awkward.
So a thank you hug.
Yeah, but like current Louis Pasteur, not, you know, because he said the exhumation might be a little weird. Like,
yeah,
he kind of went there.
So a necrophiliac thank you hug.
Yeah,
the dusty bones.
We'll just let him know that he can resurrect him in this story.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
unless he doesn't want to.
Plus, yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't. Go on. Let's carry okay. on.
Bracken said, "Whoever created this game, it's an obvious cry for help."
Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
Oh my God, that's a good answer.
Mr. Clicked, whatever, says Justin's shrink.
Yeah, he needs it.
So there you go. And then finally.
They all do, by the way.
Brandon Doss says Bevo after she had to sit through Waka 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 being played live on air, followed by its meticulous analysis.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I feel like Bev could have used a hug then.
That's probably the last thing she wanted.
I literally
though.
Did not want to be touched.
Right.
I do want to go back and listen to that analysis, though, because I like vaguely remember that we dove into that.
Oh, yeah.
And
line by
I'm
line.
I'm sure it was awesome.
It was so terrible. Like, there aren't a lot of exact moments from the show that I remember. Like, I will never forget. Are you making yourself a note?
Yeah.
I'm sure it was very thoughtful analysis, and soon Fox Sports will be all over us to break stuff down. Or maybe guest judges on The Voice something, because that was pretty, you know.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sure we did really good.
Waka, waka, waka on a bad behind.
Just so new listeners can know.
And it suits me just fine. Waka, waka, waka. Oh, I'm not going to hurt her. Waka, waka, waka. Look at that. She is a squirter.
Oh, my God. What was wrong with this?
I forgot about that last part.
That's the only line I remember. Because I was like, oh, dear heavens. What?
Oh, it's still going.
Oh, no. It's
she's in the Army think tank.
Oh, my God.
How many out there whack it? To that sweet Bebo racket.
Oh, no.
That's the worst.
Oh, God.
I forgot how bad it was.
I'm, like, yeah. Turning inside out right now. Like, I'm cringing so hard.
I am, too, but it's from laughter. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm having fun with it.
Do me a favor, listeners, because I'm lazy. Somebody who's a super fan, go back and tell me what episode we did the dissection of that in, because I would love to hear what we had to say. Like, I could already think of half of it as I'm listening to it, and I was like, oh, God, did you say that, though?
Probably.
That's a good one.
Whatever happened to Sugar?
Yeah.
Poor Sugar.
Maybe he made it. Maybe he went to Nashville and made it.
Nashville.
Okay. Well, let's go through and vote here. Well, one of them was Jesus.
His arms seem kind of stuck in one position.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. Warren.
Like, seriously. No. No, seriously. Hug me. Hug me. Yeah. No, yeah. No, really. Hug me.
I'm hugging you.
I love you. Hug me. That would be fucking terrible.
Oh, my God. Horrible people.
All right, Michael Jackson was one. I'm going to take that one out.
Yeah. I'm good with that.
Napoleon Bonaparte.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone want to keep that one in?
I think he's already kind of hugging himself.
Yeah, I could take that one out.
All right, it's fine.
I like Doc after his poll tragedy.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
He needed a hug. I'm going to leave that one in.
Okay.
Dead Louis Pasteur.
Yeah, current Louis.
I'll take that out.
Right.
Since anyone has a strong feeling.
All right.
The current makes it better.
Whoever invented this game slash cry for help / JP.
Okay.
We're going to leave that in.
I really thought you guys would go, that's cool, let's take it off.
No, that one's good.
That one's the winner. I mean, I don't even know why we're talking about
it. It's really good.
I have to pee, so do it before I pee so I can wet myself. What?
Jay's shrink, which actually should be plural, although I don't remember if I told you, I did get fired by one.
We talked about it.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's the second shrink that's fired you. You haven't,
no.
Really?
No, remember, it was the opposite. I tried to leave the last one, and he was like, I will do this pro bono.
Yeah, but I thought there was one either before or after that was like, I'm not, like, I can't. I think this
No, is that's the recent one that fired me. The first one I tried to fire, and he would not let me.
Is my time, my timeline?
Yeah, it's all blended together. You don't get much sleep. You got the kid.
No, I really don't, man.
The first one was I tried to leave, and he was like, no, seriously, I'll do it for free.
But then didn't your craziness force him to, like, leave the country or something?
He eventually left the country.
He's in Bogota right now.
Writing his book about me.
Yeah, drinking ayahuasca and trying to cleanse the spirit of you.
He's still in Martinez. He just told Justin that he was leaving the country just so Justin wouldn't show up.
Right.
Hey, Steve, no.
He changed his last name.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
He's trans now.
Yeah, no, it was one of my recent ones that fired me. God. But so Jay's shrinks need a hug. I'm going to leave that one in there. Why not?
Yeah.
And then Bebo, specifically because of the wacko, wacko, wacko dissection.
Yes.
I'm leaving that in for sure.
I would say for me that's got the lead.
Okay, this one's tough. It's a tough one.
I thought it'd be kind of a stinker, but it came out all right.
Came out good. All right, raise your hand if it's Doc after the pole incident.
I like it, but not enough.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Everybody who's in the finals right now, you should know that you've done a good job.
Right.
But yeah, no votes for Doc after the poll.
One of you has to leave.
That's like an honorable mention right there. Okay. The person who invented this game. Raise your hand.
Oh, that's it.
That's the rest of the studio. Damn, besides JP.
All right.
JP, where was your vote going?
To Brandon, Bevo, to Bevo after Bevo. The Wacka Wacka Wacka.
That was definitely my close number two. Yeah. Yeah. Bevo deserved
a
hug.
She is a shitter.
She didn't want it, God. But she deserved
but
it.
But I definitely didn't want a hug.
Yeah, yeah. Needed, didn't want.
Yeah.
Like, I still don't want a hug.
All right.
Me.
So the winner is the person who invented this game / JP.
That's Bracken.
Really needs a hug.
Good job, Bracken.
Maybe we can find someone to give it to him.
Yeah.
Maybe. Actually, I'm in Bev's camp. I don't want to be touched. Actually, just tug on my pants and go.
Should we close like with Wacka deaf. Wacka Wacka? No, I can't do it. I used to play that like weekly.
Yeah. It's no, really, and it's one of those
maybe
things
we are
like,
growing up.
If it was submitted like today. Would do you think we would get as much traction? Do you think it would even hit the air?
No, probably not.
No,
because,
I don't think so either.
But also because we have less like listener participation in general. Like it had its moment because people would call in and comment and like it was a whole thing. And now it would just be us making awkward jokes about it.
I feel like also on the heels of the
Me Too
movement, that would be a very bad decision.
We have to have our own Bevo Too movement.
Look at there, she's turning inside out from embarrassment.
It would be all of our ringtones. It just wouldn't be on the air.
That's right. I mean, hey, Bev, do me a favor, call me. I can't find my phone. Oh, wacko, wacko, wacko.
I mean, do you think we should listen to it once more just to be sure?
It might have gotten better.
It can't hurt anything, right? I mean, Bev is already embarrassed.
Right. The damage has been done.
Right. Maybe
I'm
Teresa
getting
hasn't
a little traumatized because I actually...
Had you never... You hadn't heard it before.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, let us regale you.
I originally realized it was a song designed especially for you.
Oh, yeah,
I thought it was a really bad song.
You're not wrong.
It's one of, I think, three songs written by the same gentleman. Yeah. One of which was too inappropriate 10 years ago to play on the air.
Oh, that is true. Yeah. I forget.
There was one that we didn't play, wasn't there?
I can't remember if
I've never heard it. You wouldn't even let me listen to it.
Yeah, I can't remember if you played it or not.
You're right.
I think you were censored it.
What's that guy's name?
Sugar Valley Brewer.
Okay, we're not listening to it. And I got to go get the pizza before the place closes.
I just want to see if I still have that song. Because there was one that I was like, I'm not playing it, and I'm not playing it for Bevo. Which, look, I'm a fucking asshole. So that had to be rough.
Bevo, I want to have non-consensual sex. Yeah.
I just did a search in my Gmail. I have so many emails from Sugar Valley. So that song is in there somewhere.
Search by attachment.
Sure.
Yeah.
Where is our old
friend?
Didn't
he have like a hot daughter or something like that?
Oh, I don't know.
I think so.
I don't think so. That doesn't sound right. That to me.
You don't think it does.
Sounds like a fantasy of yours.
I want Sugar Valley to be my father-in-law.
Sounds like a weird fantasy of yours.
Married to that talent.
All right. Well, we'll call it a day. But
produce him.
If anyone wants to send in to feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com, the show and the timestamp of when we actually analyzed Wacka Wacka.
Emphasis on anal.
I would love to hear 10-year-old us.
Oh, God.
Literally.
Really?
10 years ago, but it's actually 10-year-old us. Yeah. All right.
Embarrassing.
This is how we get doxxed, Justin.
I know. Yeah.
It's the wrong usage, Warren.
I defined it on the show, whatever that was.
Can't do it.
All right. Hey, thanks to Ghost Town Brewing Company from Oakland, California. You can go to ghosttownbrewing.com and learn more about them. Check them out on Facebook, too. I think they got even more information over there. They're great beers. It was really enjoyable to have them
stuff.
In the studio. Yeah, that was nice. I had a couple of those pale ales. I might have another with dinner here afterward, too.
There you go.
All right. We are off next week. It's Memorial Day weekend, so go out and be safe and be careful. Take care of each other. Don't do anything stupid. You know these holiday weekends go. Everyone gets out there and crazy.
Avoid the bookings.
Drives home.
That's right.
Don't do that. Be good to yourself and to others, and don't drink and drive or anything like that. So
and hug people.
And hug people because, you might not get the chance.
In a strong and caring manner.
If you're in Scotland, come hug me. I'll be floating around there.
You mean Scotland next week, huh?
Not well, 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Nice.
Jump the gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's no show next week, so now's my time to say it.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look for Beardy in Scotland.
Yeah, he'll blend right in.
He'll be the ginger.
Yeah. He'll be the most tan ginger.
First yeah. time he'll just fit in. For
right.
Yeah.
Hey, look at this black guy. No, it's me, Warren. I'm, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you seen yourself? Pretty tan.
All
I'm
right.
going home.
We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Good.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you to our show sponsor, More Beer. You can get absolutely everything you need to make great beer at home by going to morebeer.com. The studio is anything but a ghost town. As the crew from Ghost Town Brewing came in to talk to us about hop sugars and balanced beers, learn more about them over at ghosttownbrewing.com. Merge your love of Disneyland with a lack of engaging podcast and go to earsuppodcast.com as JP, Terrence, Bevo, and Taryn talk about all things Disney. Get on Twitter for some good beer insight and homebrew info and follow Nate Smith and Nathan Homebrew, Mike McDowell at Tasty McD, Warren is stuck over at Another Beardy, JP is on Instagram at Major Jip, and you can find Bevo there as well at Beverly M. Moore. Be sure to find the Brewing Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his charity care.